Hey there, Joel Radio returns. Welcome back to the podcast that you love, your favorite podcast.
Yeah.
And I refer to you, Corey Hall.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Actually, I'm a big fan of Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal.
Oh, really?
WTF.
Yes.
We hate movies. There's so many podcasts.
We're in that group.
This is my, like, 15th favorite podcast.
When did Gilbert Gottfried ever give you free veggie straws?
He gave me a bite of his steak tips.
He did. Okay. Well, that's good for him.
I mean, you know.
And I talked last week about giving Gilbert his gift. You weren't here.
Yeah. I knew what was in
it. You knew what was in it, and he loved it. And he was also, I think I told him I had watched every Abbott and Costello movie in 90 days, and he went, oh, my God. I'm not sure if I got that across on last show, but anyway, yeah. So
you should be a guest on the mini episode.
I could do a mini episode
just to talk about Abbott and Costello.
Abbott and A&C.
Noted Abbott and Costello expert.
Chubby Abbott and Costello expert Joel Fragamenti joins
us. On a side tangent, my wife watched all the Fosse. I watched them too, the Fosse Verdon.
Yeah, it was good.
And it took a while that she finally cleaned off the DVR of those. Yeah. And then that led to, like, looking at clips of them in real, performances. And then, like, Shirley MacLaine was doing a thing, a tribute to Fosse on YouTube. And I went,
we watched All That Jazz after watching that.
Exactly.
Which my girlfriend did not like, even though they've recreated much of it in the show.
A little depressing, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I casually went, Shirley MacLaine's a hell of a dancer. She's in my favorite Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis movie, Artists and Models.
There you go.
I looked at myself and I went, what man under 70
has
a favorite Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis movie?
Yeah.
Which are not as good overall as the...
Believe me, there's bad... The ones you see from Abbott and Costello, the ones that everybody knows, are the good ones.
Yeah, there's terrible ones.
But there's terrible ones. But anyway, let's move on.
You don't see the killer Boris Karloff.
No, because that one's not good. You don't see Little Giant where they're lose a vacuum cleaner salesman.
Is that one in Technicolor?
No, that one's in black.
Oh, the Jack and the Beanstalk.
The Jack and the Beanstalk was. But Bud was his boss, so they didn't have to shoot scenes together.
Oh.
They were fighting at the time. Mm. But anyway, so this is a little bit of a different show today. We did a remote interview, which we will be flying in here momentarily. At Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle, we sat with Norm Stultz, one of the Michigan comedy legends, who was...
I mean, when you talk, they throw that word around rather liberally.
And he is, though.
But Norm has been around for a long time, and when I started doing comedy, I think I said that in the interview, his name was already venerable, and people were like, you gotta see Norm.
You gotta see Norm. And so we'll be giving you that here in just a second. But let's billboard what'll be at the back end of the show, Corey. Because we're going to get to the bottom of Dave.
We're going to put all the good stuff on the bottom.
The Dave Chappelle comedy special, Sticks and Stones, is driving the world crazy. We'll investigate that.
Stick around for hot takes.
I will.
Hot takes coming at you.
We'll tell you about lots of, I think there's a lot of really good stuff on TV this year.
Hot takes on My Friend Irene from 1948 with Dean Martin and
We'll talk about movies and TV shows that came out this year.
No.
Like The Boys, which I don't think you've seen.
No.
But you should have. And we'll talk about the third season of Glow and some really good stuff, Righteous Gemstones. Well, we may, or I think we are probably going to, if time permitting, talk about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. At some length, because...
Do we never talk about that?
Well, we haven't been here, and I talked about it with Bill Hildebrandt, and his review was, my girlfriend wanted to leave, so we walked out, then we found out how it ended, and now she wants to go back to watch the end, which actually is a perfectly valid review of that movie, but we'll talk more about it, and The Amazing Jonathan, the dueling documentaries, hopefully we can get to that. And then we will rank the boomer rock movies, Corey. We have seen them all.
Oh, man.
And look out. It could get contentious in here. Fists might be flying.
When will someone, my dream is someone will make a movie with Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
and Jack Black.
Okay.
As the Turtles.
Oh, my goodness.
Because there were like two, Flo and Eddie, right? There were like
well,
two,
they became Flo and Eddie. Yeah, they were like, couldn't use the Turtles.
But there were two fat guys in the Turtles. and I think I just see that Jonah Hill with an afro dancing around with a tambourine.
You know what? They have a good, well, I know Howard Kalin, I think, has written a book. Mm. I don't know about the other guy. Yeah. I don't know what he's up to. But Howard Kalin is like a guest on a lot of shows and stuff. And
he's a good guest.
They were in. They were also in The Mothers of Invention.
Yeah.
With Frank Zappa. So they probably have a good movie.
This is the headline. They were the 11th greatest rock band in the 60s. The Turtles.
Wasn't there a Turtles play or was there a musical?
Oh, God, was there?
Happy Together? Or am I completely out of... I know there's a Rascals
I'm just
musical.
Well, when's the jukebox musical of Herman's Hermits? When do we do that?
Oh, I'm sure they've...
There's a kind of a hush, the Herman's Hermits story.
Well, you know, Ferry Across the Mersey, the story of Jerry and the Pacemakers.
That's right.
Coming up. Bio of Georgie Fame and his Famous Flames.
Oh.
Was that? That wasn't it was Georgie Fame and the Flames.
Yeah.
The Famous Flames.
When is the Gary Puckett and the Union Gap movie coming?
We're going to take you, speaking of old shit, we're going to take you to an interview with Norm. I'm kidding, Norm. Norm's great. He's so funny.
Norm our oldest guest we've ever had?
I don't know if he's our oldest guest.
Is he older than Hildebrandt?
But here's the thing about Norm. I don't even know how old Norm is. I guess I didn't want to ask him.
Yeah.
But to be doing comedy... At the level he's doing, he did the whole weekend at the Comedy Castle. It was great. I saw every show. He did a great job.
Yeah.
And I know you sat, I think you watched the whole show that night, didn't you?
I watched the whole show, yeah.
And he's fun to talk to. He's fun to hang out with. He's got some good stories. So why don't we do that right now? We will fly over to Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle.
The great Norm Stoltz.
Now, usually there's like a whooshing sound or something when people go to another place. Or there's a musical bed. That's okay. You want to try that again? All right, here we go. And we'll take you. Wait for it. Right now, let's take you to Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle.
He's got a really nice studio, but I made him come down here to the green room.
You haven't seen the studio. It's not as nice as you might think.
Yeah, right.
But it's good to be here. Comedy Castle. This is the spot.
Yeah, it is.
It's the spot for you for how many years now?
Let's see. I started at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle in 1981.
Okay.
And he started in 79, so I'm a couple years behind him. And
that was like six venues ago.
It was like six venues ago.
He had a lot of different spots before the final form of the Comedy Castle.
Yeah, I follow. In fact, I posted when Kip Adada passed away very recently.
Yeah, I talked about Kip on the last show.
Kip
was
the opening act at Mark Ridley's. It was an invitation he sent out for the final, the fifth or sixth. I don't know what the math was. And final.
the permanent home. I saw that.
Of that.
Permanent home of the Comedy Castle.
With Kip Adada. Yeah. I thought, you know, I'm going to throw this out there.
Right.
And then this week I'm here at the Comedy Castle, and I can't tell you how many friends have sent me texts and memos going, hey, Norm, they're down on Woodward now. I'm like, no, they're, that was an old thing. Hello, yeah, Kip Adada is
dead. The spaghetti factory
anymore.
Yeah,
right. Well.
Exactly.
You're alive and Kip's dead.
Yeah,
so you won. Yeah.
So it's
you
I'm
won.
Up by one.
Congratulations, exactly. Norm.
The over under.
That's what happens. How do you become a comedy legend? You have the other guys die, and then you become. But you are a legend in Michigan. I know Corey. I met you. I must have been a year in, maybe 2 years.
What year would that be?
2000, maybe. Chaplains.
And we're at Chaplains.
Chaplains
west,
over
east,
on the east side. Grosbeck east, west yep. was gone. I never worked west.
You never worked
no,
west?
Only Chaplains
west,
East, guys.
West is fun. It's a mixed audience. You could come up and say, hi, yellow. They don't know what you meant.
Corey will tell you the same thing. We only hear about Chaplains West.
Oh, they only hear
it
about
was great.
It was a memory?
Well, that's the cutoff line. We can tell how old a guy is.
how many Chaplains
but
there
the Chaplains West stories are like, you know, I got 1,500 to feature. I walked off, got a blowjob. Then I got in a limo, go back to the hotel. And you hear
that was
these
Chaplains
stories.
West?
That was Chaplains West. That's what we hear.
Yeah, but I missed a whole lot of that. I never got the limo or the blowjob. So.
When I started, all the 70s and 80s guys were like, oh, they paid us half in cocaine.
Yeah,
oh,
you hear all those stories.
It's Bolivian. Charo would pour it on her chest and you'd have to snort up your paycheck. It was just like...
You know, Mark used to host all of his shows.
Yeah,
and
I know
he had
that,
this
yeah.
big, thick mustache, and he would go in between sets, and he'd put baby powder in his mustache. Have you heard this?
No, I haven't.
And he'd walk out, and he'd come out and go... and it would just blow this giant smoke out. And he'd go, I was in the office, you know, but it was very funny. Good old Mr. Ridley. So, yeah, it's been I was at the one with at the Greek restaurant where you went down the steps. I went to see the guys out in Orchard Lake.
Okay.
So I saw that, Lowell Sanders and some of the guys from back then. But the first time I stepped on stage was on the one at Woodward and under the Greek restaurant.
Okay,
that was.
But you now, because I know I listen to the Comedy Castle podcast, which I also produce.
Right.
But
which
I
thought was great.
You didn't have a you have a music background.
Yeah, I played
so you
music.
Were playing professionally. You were doing gigs.
I was getting
doing
paid.
All that?
Yeah, I was getting
what,
paid.
What did you play?
I played guitar.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Cat Gut and 12 String, all Cat Stevens and Simon and Garfunkel.
Okay,
and
so singer songwriter
stuff. Yeah, back when I
was
in
college. Was it just you, or did you have a band?
No, I had a well, first I started with a friend, Jerry Goffin, and Buddy and I played for a number of years, and then more and more people wanted to join the band, and the money didn't go
exactly.
up. So I kept splitting it up, and one day I got paid, and I paid five other guys. I walked out with like $11 and said, well, this sucks.
You know,
ass.
That is the beauty of comedy.
And that it was
stand up. No drummer.
No drummer. Well, we actually had a drummer at one time, and I was helping carrying like a column speaker out of a basement up these steps. Yeah. I'm like, I need something.
Yeah.
So, you know me. You guys know me now. It's like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, right. You know? Well, that's the thing. When I got started in stand-up, I would always ask advice. Guys like you.
Right.
Bill Hildebrand told me this one time, because people were telling me this. He said, Bill, should I do improv? And he said, do you want to split the check five ways? I said, no. He said, don't do improv.
Yeah.
That was his advice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's exactly what we did when I got rid of the band, which we had a blast.
Yeah.
But
well, I see these bands, you know, with like these funk bands or whatever, have got like 15 players. And you're like, do I need that other trombone?
I mean,
that's some more money in the pocket.
Yeah.
Chicago. Can you imagine their first gigs driving around going, okay, we got $300. Okay, you get $12.50. You get $12.50.
a mutual comedian friend of ours opened for them once. And he said that at that point, Chicago, all of them came in their own limo separately.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
And they all pulled up separately, didn't talk to each other, set up, did the show, and left.
I
was just like, no contact.
Not traveling together, but I brought up George Clinton in Parliament Funkadelic. And Clinton has nothing to do with those guys whatsoever.
No.
Because they literally have a guy that sings. So everything George sings, another guy sings.
Yeah.
They just drop him in from the mothership.
Well, no, if George walks off the stage, you would never know it aside from him not being up there. The band just goes on and does their thing.
My first official comedy limo ride was the first time I headlined here.
Okay.
I think it was in 1989, and it wasn't this building, but it was the Comedy Castle.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stayed in town, and they said, well, it's 7 a.m., they'll pick you up, and they're going to take you down to Ken Calvert, Ken and Lynn, and it was WRIF.
Yeah.
And Ted Nugent was there.
Okay. And they had a mustache competition.
They had a competition. but I'll tell
Ridley,
you what,
brothers in mustache, Ridley and Calvert.
The first time a limo picks you up, and you know, I sit in the back of this giant car, and the guy says, you know, back, I mean, 100 years ago, a phone in your car was amazing.
Yeah.
And there was and he goes, and there's today's newspaper and this and that. And I'm being driven down. I'm like, okay. You do know that I'm just Norm Stahls, right?
Yeah.
And it's because it's weird.
Yeah.
And I went in to see Ken Calvert, met him and Lynn, and we did the first little segment. They went to break, and he goes, wow, he's quick. And I go, is that good or bad? And I go, oh, it's good.
Okay.
And then for the last 25 years, I've been doing radio call-ins from a couple different call-ins around.
Okay.
And I play a character called Drunk Doug. I call in once in a while.
Oh, really?
And just, do things like my I got a Uber ride. My Uber ride was he was super nice. You know, I had to give him a five. Can you guys? I'm having trouble finding him online. Officer Johnson, you know, can you give me? Yeah, exactly. So obviously, I was.
You know,
down.
There's not enough drunks in entertainment anymore.
Like,
in terms of like characters. Remember, you get Foster Brooks or whatever. You just
Foster Brooks.
You could
was
just
the best.
Play his whole career being a complete.
Well, Dudley Moore,
guy.
When we were kids,
was
hot with his drunk act.
It's not so funny anymore with the sobriety.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Well,
you can't get away with that, right?
You know, sobriety. I work at sobriety.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I work at sobriety.
Well,
who books that? Is that a good room?
Yeah. The guy's name's Bill. It's from 1930s, and it's pretty old.
Well,
this
is not a – if you have any substance problems, this is not the gig for you. Stand-up comedy.
No.
This is not the place
there are people
sober.
That try.
They try, but as we've seen, which will – redact the names here, but people have famously failed that we know.
Yeah.
At that. Yeah. So I'm not. But that was a thing for you? I mean, you were.
Oh, I'm not a good. I'm not a good drunk.
Yeah.
I don't drink. I overdrink.
Okay.
And I mean, I was on the road for 8 or 10 years, and everybody knew I didn't drink. So if somebody sent me a shot, because those were the days where they would send you shots.
Yeah.
And if it was whiskey, they would mix Coke and Sprite till it got to the right. And then send it up.
Sure.
And if it was clear, they'd send him a shot of tequila, and they'd send me the lime, and I would lick my and make the face, you know, and they would get $8 for a glass of water. Everybody was happy.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's challenging.
Because you have that open check usually.
Yeah.
At least back then you did. I don't know about nowadays.
Even here, everything's free. Yeah. Everything's free. I talk about it in my act. And, it's just too easy. And you don't have to be to work till 8 o'clock tomorrow night. that's a plus.
Yeah.
But it's bad when you're alone. How many friends of ours have we found dead in the room by themselves because they
aspirate. Never put it together that it's norm.
No, it wasn't me.
It's like murder, she wrote. I cracked the case.
I was working.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine going to a party and Angela Lansbury walks in? I'm fucking leaving.
Wait, there's another famous comic dead and Norm Stoltz found the body?
I was working on the road at this club, and I don't usually drink when I do stand-up because I don't like trying to do the act drunk. Like,
I used too many words to drink before the show.
Yeah. So I was very sober, and I would, you know, and then one night I was out. This is Grand Rapids, Dr. Grin. So,
okay.
You know the place.
Yeah, the Bob. Great place.
Fun place to be, right?
Yeah.
So I decide I'm going to have a drink after the show, and I go up to the bartender. You know, they have the, the service bar in the back.
Right.
And I say, hey, can I get a drink? Joel, the MC, you know, I think it was the MC at that point. I'm seeing, you know. Just so you know, you've had enough, you know, we can't give you any more. I said, I've had one drink, you know. And he goes, oh, no, the headliners come back and said, one for me, one for Joel, one for me, one for Joel, one for me, one for Joel.
Oh.
All night.
No.
And guess what the headliner is doing? Two for him, none for me, two for him, none for me.
Oh, really?
And I didn't realize that. So he was using my stipend to fuel his drunkenness, which was not good.
It's great when you get to intercept the shots that are heading up to the you just know the other guy's head too much, and you got to, like, catch them before they get up there.
Well, the guys that I've seen, you know, some of the famous real messes. And you see them when they get that and way, man.
I mean, we both.
We're only holding names because there's a documentary crew, so that's why we don't.
You can say names.
Yeah. Well, you want a name? He's not with us any longer.
Oh well, if they're dead.
Well, there was a few.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, we know one guy. Like,
we have a lot of. I have a lot of friends from Detroit that. That went through rehab.
All right. Well, let's lighten the mood.
Exactly. Let's quit talking about death for God's sake.
I had a guy who was no longer with us who once gave his mom my number. And told her that he was hanging out with me. And I hadn't seen the guy in like 7 months or something. And like literally that was the, had his mom call me. And I'm like, I ratted on him. I'm like, I don't know where he is.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's a strange one. But so 40 years in.
40 years in. I started in 81. Oh, so 40, almost 40 years there. 40 years here.
What's the difference? I mean, Comedy Castle's been around.
Right.
But Comedy Castle really, for those of you that don't know, is really the exception. You know, there used to be lots of comedy clubs. There used to be places that were doing 8 shows a week and stuff.
Yeah.
And now, you know, there's the Comedy Castle, Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase here in Michigan. And then there's a couple other ones that
Got Dr. Grin's over there. But Ann Arbor. That's it. There's like three or four. And there used to be
one or two, one club a state or one club a city. Where there used to be three or four.
Yeah.
You know.
So what has changed for you as far as like the venues and that kind of stuff? I mean, is it less clubs than it used to be, but is it more restaurants? I know I see in Florida all the time playing. Yeah, are you playing retirement centers?
I haven't done retirement centers.
Okay.
I have. There's a couple places like the Island Walk.
Okay.
But they're all high end. You get on to Naples and good budgets, and they have a beautiful room set up.
Well, that's
up
what I mean.
You.
Those places have budgets. Yeah.
They've got good budgets. But they're, you know, you still do a good bar gig.
Yeah.
I mean, in St. Augustine, Jackie Knight has had comedy there for years, and it's a bar gig. But man, it's packed.
Yeah.
They come for the comedy.
Right.
And it's a blast. We used to do a free one up in, remember Maxie's up in Flint?
Yeah, Maxie's.
It was the best free comedy club.
It was
a Sunday night.
Holly Hotel gig.
They wouldn't turn the TVs off. But other than that.
No. I'll tell you what, not at Maxie's. It was 100% comedy. Everybody came out
for it. Yeah, it had its ups and downs. But yeah, I mean, I think by the time we got to it, it might have been
There's a lot of dead clubs. I think the guys stripped, the owners stripped as much money as they could have out of the deal and left.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But sometimes literally out of the walls where they'd stash cash and
Corey. That's Corey Hall.
Or they sold
Corey.
Or they sold the lumber, you know, to make some money back.
Well, there's
not as many clubs in Michigan,
right.
But thank God years ago I started traveling around the country.
Yeah.
And now I have friends in almost every state that I can call and say I'm going to be out there. I have an agency that I can call and say I want to go out west.
Yeah.
So I'm doing a casino run out west for Thanksgiving so I can go see my granddaughter in Flagstaff, Arizona, Chris and Darcy and Will.
Okay.
So we're going out. I'm doing Portland, mm-hmm. Portland, Oregon. And I fly into Vegas and do two nights at the D at the Vegas. And then we do a run that starts in Lake Havasu and Edgewater, Laughlin, Nevada, then over to Arizona.
You're getting the good gigs.
Yeah.
After this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I still do little shows, but I like them all.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think for me, I kind of got off the road because I was playing the same places for the same money.
Yeah.
You know,
and never moving up.
And, you know, 15 years in, it was kind of like, you know, do I need to do this?
Yeah.
Am I enjoying these shows that, you know, and then like I'd go to these shows and there'd be three people there.
Oh, no.
And then I'd get a call and be like, you know, what happened with the show?
You're saying you don't
want to go? And I'm like, there were three people there. And the guy would go, yeah, but, you know, they said it wasn't good. And I go, there's three people. I did the show. I did for 300 people last week. I did it for the three. It's not as good. You can do the math.
Twice in my career, I've worked for four people.
Okay.
Once about, I don't know, 35 years ago, where a guy in Jackson said, we're doing a show.
Yeah.
It was a blizzard and there was nobody there. It was just stupid. And I'm like, okay, if you want, why don't you just give him some comps for next week?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, no, we're doing a show.
Yeah.
So the feature went up on stage and did his act. And I just went and sat at the people's table.
Yeah.
And started chatting with them just like this. Well, and then worked in some material. We laughed for 45 minutes or an hour. And I said, thanks, have fun. Yeah. And they were very happy.
That sounds good. But that was always too much work for me. I wanted to walk on stage and do the show.
I
was kind of my attitude towards it. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong or maybe, you know, whatever, but I always found that was the thing for me. That's what was hurting my road, my enjoyment of the road. Was like I do the show that I would do everywhere and then they say, there was three fucking people there.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead, Corey.
I did a show in a literally in the bar of a trailer park.
Okay.
And there was the bartender, his girlfriend, and like the guy with the mop. And we were like, well, we're good. We can just take off. Now they're like, no, you're going to do the show. And we had to sit there and do the show for the bartender and his drunk girlfriend. And it was like,
If you're doing a theater, like, if you're doing a whole production and you've got the production ready and 12 people show up in a 1,000-seat theater, you still got to do the show.
Right. Yeah. Let's talk about your show.
My show.
Yeah. I love your show.
Oh, you're very kind.
And I love your show in that, I don't want to say nobody does your show, but when you see, you know, you do enough comedy, you see enough comedy, and certainly when you start in at it, you start working with different headliners. And, you know, they start to feel a little samey.
Oh,
you know, some
they?
Of the guys, they
see,
start
I don't
to
see
feel,
a lot of headliners.
You don't see a lot, but, you know, and Corey will tell you the same thing. You know, you go on the road and you're going, you got pulled over on the way. Oh, so did the guy last week got pulled over on the way to show. And
right.
You guys are the worst drivers in this town. And then it's like, okay.
And I do a little something on flying.
Okay,
And I'm trying to get it out because everybody does flying.
Yeah.
But then once I get past flying, it gets into, my flying is not the food and, you know, not the,
right.
It's different from everybody.
But then
else's.
When I worked with you the first time, it was like, boy, this guy's
different.
He's got a whole – I mean, the audience, there's no place for anyone to heckle him because he's just
right.
talking and talking
right,
and talking.
Right.
Which
it's
is
more
great.
Of a lecture.
But that's great when you have a crowd that wants to be part of the show. If you don't give them an inch to say anything, that
you
covers
could...
all that. And it's long stories. And it's not like stories where you have to wait for the punchline. Everything's
it's funny all the way
through. Yeah. And I'm like, man, why doesn't anyone do what Norm does?
Have you ever considered calling it a one-man show, booking theaters and charging double the ticket price.
I have. I used to do a show called The Norm Stoltz Show. It's all about laughter. The one-man show, one night, one man, one night full of funny or whatever the hell it
was. You know, make it – throw in something.
Yeah, I have done.
Throw in something about God or something, and then, you can really stick them for some loot.
Yeah. I do some characters. I do Forrest Hump's evil brother, Forrest Hump. Yeah, she was banging everybody, you know. So I do that, which is in my theater show, which I'll be doing in Florida.
Okay.
So I've got a contract with a 500 seat theater in Florida.
Yeah.
For the first quarter.
Oh, okay.
We do every Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. I headline the first night.
Yeah.
And then I host. I do 20 minutes each of the next 12 weeks, and the money's good. And then on the weekends, I go to Port Charlotte or Vero Beach, or I fly up here. I'm doing the Pix Theater. Doing.
See, Corey, he's got
the Pix Theater in the Pier. Yeah,
you don't need to manage Norm's career. And, he's got it.
And the Lex. And
what I like is that you have evolved in that 20 years ago, you were the storyteller.
Yeah.
And you would do maybe like two big long.
Yeah, people would say that.
And now you're kind of doing more material and very. You still can do stories at any point.
Why do you think it's changed?
You've evolved over time.
Almost the entire first hour is gone.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, I have friends come up going, "Are you going to do Cupman?" I go, "Dude, I haven't done Cupman in 20 years, but it was funny. The downhill ski bit that you talked about, because we were on the road doing that. And I would start doing this downhill ski bit, and I thought, man, this is kind of long. I should cut it. Yeah. So I listened to it, and I couldn't find anything that wasn't funny.
Because it worked. It was great for like a half hour.
But people would get up, and they'd go to the restroom. They'd come back like, holy shit, he's still on the same bit.
Yeah.
You know, but and I started working faster.
Yeah.
Because the more material I wanted to put into the hour.
I'm saying you're hitting more topics now, and it feels a little bit more like
it changes a little bit. It fluctuates. There's no longer about my children. It's about my grandchildren. The older I got, things change.
Yeah.
But downhill ski bit's not in. Canoe bit's not in. There's a whole bunch of them that aren't. And every once in a while, I get request a bit. From fans that'll come up and go, I brought this group. We want to see this bit. So I try to work it in.
Oh, okay. That's nice. Well, you'll do that.
Also, with time, you have to evolve your act because you can't be like, you know. You can't be 53 and be like, boy, my roommate's a real jerk.
I remember watching Buddy Hackett in Vegas, and he said, you know, my kids want me to ski. And he goes like this. And his youngest child at the time was 43 years old. So he'd been telling that joke at that height, you know, for 35 years. Yeah. And Bob Newhart, I read today, Bob Newhart, Richard Lewis says, I am so sick of doing my act. I don't know what to do. And Bob says, you know, we're here to entertain them, not ourselves.
Right.
Do your show.
Yeah.
Do what works.
Right.
I'd rather see 35 minutes of very funny stuff that I know works, than 38 minutes of shit that you don't know if it's going to work or not.
Bob Newhart wrote that Lincoln on the phone bit
in
1961.
Exactly.
And he called it a career. He's like, that's all I got to do. I'm just going to do this material.
That's all Newhart
did. I'm 92 years old. Yeah.
Yeah.
He just turned 90, but I agree.
Does he still work?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Does he, Bob Newhart?
He still works. He still does some of the same things. You know, that button-down collar
album. I heard him on Conan O'Brien. He was on Conan O'Brien's podcast.
Yeah.
And it was great because he just slow, in that really quiet Newhart way, just kept ripping Conan and throwing digs in and just totally like undermining him. And it was hilarious. And Conan was loving it. You know, he just kept doing that.
And he's got that stammer. And ABC told him, you need to stop that stammer. And he goes, this stammer bought me a mansion in Beverly Hills.
It bought Ellen DeGeneres a mansion because she's just doing him, right? Wasn't that her stand-up?
It was something about the phone, about calling God.
Now when you...
But everybody's used a phone.
Yeah,
in fact, I've changed mine from the finger and thumb to holding it up against the side of your head.
Because
nobody does this anymore.
I have a phone.
And do you use this?
I called three friends or whatever, and I do that.
Exactly. And you do this. See, I changed mine to a cell phone.
Started, you had that receiver on the left, and you had to climb up the pole.
So, in all these years, you must have been, you know, in 81, as a young comic, you must have been working with some of the legends, the guys that.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
who'd you work with? Any stories about those guys? Or?
Well, I can remember. I remember there's a guy, Tim Dick. He uses his
middle name. Tim Zaikowski. One of the legends.
Right. Yeah, Tim Z. but I can remember Tim and I driving around to open mic nights.
Yeah.
I can remember Tim and I going to – we opened B's Comedy Kitchen.
Yeah, okay.
Down there. And I can, you know, I recall back.
Tim Allen, he's referring to.
Those of you not- I remember sitting in one of Mark's rooms. I think it was the one at the Spaghetti Company. Mm. And when Elaine Stefik was his manager. Okay. They both came in and sat next to me. And I remember Tim going, Norm, I'm writing this new bit about tools.
Yeah.
And it's coming together great.
Yeah.
And then he would go up and he would do open mic. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all did open
mic. Yeah.
Did you run into guys like Richard Lewis and those guys?
I didn't. Then? I never knew Richard Lewis when he was young. But I mean, Kuye. I remember walking up to Kuye after he had he didn't pass the audition for Saturday Night Live.
No.
And he was at the Castle.
They already had a guy that did Bullwinkle?
Maybe. Maybe. But I remember I walked up to him and I said, hey, Dave, it's Norm Stultz. I shook his hand. He goes, Norm? He goes, I know who you are.
Yeah.
He goes, we're friends. He goes, don't ever fucking do that again. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And another Kuye story. I'm in Milwaukee getting ready for a gig. And I'm a big hockey fan, so I'm watching the hockey, and there's an All-Star game, and then before that is the old-timer All-Star game.
Yeah.
And they show the roster in old CG, you know, like I would do it because I'm old. And one of the guys was Kuye. And I'm like, oh, I know a guy who spells his name like that. And the very first break, they do a cutaway.
Yeah.
Hey, we got the star of Full House. Here's Dave Kuye. What's it like? Oh, man, this is great.
Yeah.
Well, a few months later, I'm doing a golf outing, and Dave's there. And I go, Dave, what was that like? I said, I was so pissed. I had to go do a show. He goes, man, it was amazing. I'm standing between Gordie Howe and Yvonne Corwaye.
Yeah.
And I turned to Gordie and I said, if I didn't have a cup on, I'd have the biggest heart out of my life. And without missing a beat, Mr. Howe goes, if you lay face down on the ice, that'll go away. But yeah, there was.
Dave loves the hockey, and he really did use his fame to get close to the hockey player.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I mean, sure. But I think a lot of, if you're in show business, there's always somebody famous to you.
Oh, of course.
You know, even if you're the biggest name, there's always somebody that they go, oh, wow.
I was headlining at one of the clubs, at one of Mark's clubs. The late Gene Taylor, who was with Dick Purton for years, one of his writers and producers, was sitting over here, and there was a file cabinet to my left in the office, in Mark's office. And we're talking away, and Gene kind of looks up, and he goes, hey, Bob. He goes, hey, Gene, how's it going? He goes, good. He goes, do you know our headliner, Norm Stultz? So I stand up to be polite, and Gene Taylor goes, Norm Stultz, Bob Seger. And I kind of went, and I realized that I this was a hero of mine since I was 15 years old, and now he's backstage. He's in the room shaking my hand. I'm like, okay, can we get a picture of this? No, of course not, because we didn't have cell phones.
Yeah.
It was a long, long time ago. Fuck you. And but it was great to meet him.
We had the monkey with the chisel and a camera.
But Bob said, Mr. Seger said, please, he said, don't recognize me from the stage. I don't want to be Bob Seger tonight. So I want to be Bob. I'm going to sit over here.
Yeah.
You know, but it's things like that. So, yeah, everybody has a hero. And it's weird to be just me and have people go, oh, he's going to be one of the legends of comedy, or he's going to be this. Or people that come up to me in, like, Houston and go, oh, my God, I remember the first time I met you. And I'm like, oh hi. You know, first of all, I'm an idiot with names. I'm terrible. But it's weird being recognized, having fans. There were people here last night. Oh, my God, we can't wait to see you again. I'm like, oh, thanks for coming. I have no idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
Well, that's when you know you've made it. When you
Is
got
it?
People. I think when people come to see you.
Yeah,
instead of just because, like, people go to comedy club and they're excited to want to see comedy, and they trust that, in this case, Mr. Ridley's going to put a nice lineup together, and he does.
Right.
But, you know, you don't always have people showing up to see that guy.
Right.
And you've gotten to the point, and there's still guys, hilarious guys, we all know them, where they're still just that anonymous headliner.
Yeah.
And then you're a guy where, like, we're fans of Norm, and
we
want to
really
see Norm,
weird.
And people ask. Because I know when we do, like, we do a lot of the corporate events, private parties and that, and a lot of them ask for Norm.
Nice.
And I remember talking to Mary Coyle once about, you know.
I love Mary.
And it was so, and they're like, so we've got the, and we were talking, she's, that's group coming in, and that's who's coming in, oh, Norm's headlining, and I go, didn't Norm do their party last year? And they're like, yeah, they wanted him again.
Isn't that
so? Like,
weird.
They'll
that's
have
weird.
The same. You know, normally Mary's like, well, we're going to give you a different headliner than you had last Christmas party. And they're like,
that's very nice.
Oh, we want Norm again.
It's a very, like, imaginative group.
Yeah.
Very...
Well, no, come on.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the nicest thing about working in Florida, though. Everybody's older than me, and I can literally do the same people every night. And they're like, you know, that was new, wasn't it, Margaret? You know? Actually, I don't. I do. I am. Part of my future is Florida.
Okay.
I mean, that's why I bought a house down there. Yeah. Sean and I have a home now down there.
What town you live in?
We live in the Villages.
Oh, okay.
We get
the
up
Villages.
Every morning. We work out in the pool. Then I go play pickleball. Then I go play golf. Then we go to dinner with friends and we dance. And then, you know, three times a week I work for,
good for
an hour. You know?
That sounds,
yeah, so 40 years in, you get to choose. I don't do shitty gigs anymore.
Yeah.
That's the nicest part.
That's what I'm – I think that's what – to me, is something that I would look forward to being
right.
in a spot where it's like I can pick and choose what I want,
right?
And I don't have to do these crappy things.
Nope. And you have a minimum price.
And no. Yeah, like, I don't meet my.
I have to. Get
I don't.
This much
I.
Money.
I'm not saying you set your price, but it's you're not working for. You're not losing money on these gigs. You're not breaking.
I'm
even.
Not losing money.
You're, no, yeah, one thing that's losing. Different about you is you were married when you started, right?
And
you
correct,
were
long, and married still.
You probably you've probably been married for a good 10 years or so.
Let's see. I started. Yeah, I was married 10 years. We got married in 71. We started in 81.
Wow.
And she supported me the whole time. And she's a terrible shot. She always misses up and left, so I duck right all the time.
So you've been married like 50 years in doing comedy.
Yeah, 40.
How did that happen? Did you just?
I was
is
always
it too hard to clean out a wood chipper. Can't get all the blood out. Is that what?
You know, I'm not really sure, Corey. She's very supportive. She's amazing. She usually tours with me.
Yeah.
She's with the grandkids tonight. It was a matter of should we go see Dad's show for the 4 billionth time, or can I go see the kids play? You know, basketball or volleyball, whatever they're doing. I got to see a granddaughter volleyball game the other day. It's one of the other things, Corey. Not only did I tour. I always kept the dad part. It was important to me to be at the play and be at some of the sporting events and to coordinate it. And then my kids traveled with me. Yeah. The whole family traveled with me.
I've been married for 7 years and my wife's overseeing the act. So I don't know how your dear sweet wife manages.
Sharon does the merchandise.
That's what I remember meeting Sharon is she was selling your CD.
Right.
After the show.
Right.
Yeah.
She'd set up the merch and I'd come off stage and she'd have a glass of water. And then it was cool because, you know, when you're on the road, being a male, you know, if you're with your wife, you know you're not getting laid, you know, as opposed to trying to figure it out or buy somebody dinner.
You know, when I was single on the road, I knew I wasn't getting laid. It's amazing. It's not that bad. But let me ask you this.
Now,
I talk about this in my comedy.
And it's not just sex. I'm somebody that loves you, sir.
And that support is nice.
Yeah.
Because comedy's a tough job. The other thing, I talk about this to my comedy students, and I've come, my opinion has changed on this over the years.
Okay.
I got into comedy, and when I started, I did not have a day job. I was out of college, and I was like, I'm going to do comedy. This is what I'm going to do. If I had a day job, that would take away my drive. It would take away my energy. I wouldn't be able to drive to anything. You had a successful career.
Yes.
The whole way through stand-up, I believe, right?
Right. For 20 years, I had two professions.
Yeah.
I went to pharmacy school. Mm-hmm. I started in pharmacy when I was 10 years old, so I went to pharmacy school.
Yeah.
And graduated, and I had my gig. And when I started doing comedy and music even, I said, I can't work weekends.
Yeah.
Now pharmacy is – I worked hospital. It's 24-7 because you can't go, Mr. Hall, it's Thanksgiving. We're going to take about 5 days off. Those bags over there, try and hook those up.
Yeah.
You know, so I always had a gig.
But in my opinion, what I've come around to is I think the way you did it is the right way.
Thanks.
I think being broke made me hate it. I think going – I need this $300 to pay these bills that I got.
Right.
So I'm going to drive to the UP in the middle of February,
right.
And I had to do it. And it literally was a job. It was like, why are you going to these gigs? Well, I need the money.
Right.
You know, and I think if I didn't need the money, I think I would have been a little more choosy about the gigs that I took.
Yeah. Well,
I think I would have some of that day job money to put into whatever it be, merchandise or –
It did allow me to pick and choose. Plus, I had no zeros in my life.
Yeah.
We had three children. We had a home.
Right.
And it was like, are you, you know, a club burns down or a club closes. And it's like, you know what? Next week, you don't have a gig.
Yeah.
So next week, you have no money.
Yeah.
I have friends that are like, I only got 2 weeks booked in July.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't have that when my family was young.
Yeah.
Once the kids got out of college, I cut way back. And I never worked weekends behind a counter. Or in a hospital. I chose what I did.
That's the way to do it.
And then I went to do it.
F-U money, right,
Corey?
And
I'm not embarrassed about it.
Isn't that what you call it?
There's a lot of guys now that are doctors that do comedy.
Yeah.
There's a funny pharmacist.
It's more like F-me money the way I get paid. But,
well, it's when they call and they go, we got $300, you go, fuck you. I don't need your money.
Yeah.
Versus me where I'd go, you know.
Yeah.
I'd answer the phone. I'll do it. You know, that was the thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's a mistake because I think it kind of takes away that –
There's a it's too hard right now. There's to be out on the road. I see the young guys going out, and I don't know how they live.
Yeah,
there's guys going. You know, I sleep in my car. I'm like, yeah, I did that once.
Yeah, I did that.
That's because I was passed out. And, you know, but not because.
Yeah. But you never had to take the Flagstaff, Arizona for $100 and no room gigs.
No.
So I mean, you had the ability to build it the way you wanted it to sort of to develop the act and to develop where you wanted to go with the career. I mean,
the other thing I did is every place I went, every venue I went to, including this amazing venue, Ridley's, is they wanted me back. I didn't abuse the help. I didn't show up late.
Okay.
I didn't try to do the show drunk. I didn't try to do this.
You call yourself a comedian?
Yeah, exactly.
You haven't put a cigarette out on one bartender?
No. Professional. Professional.
But yeah, now tell us that you just spoke. So now you're on the show, whether you want to be or not. We're shooting tonight as we record this.
What is
this project? You told me a little bit about this the other day.
This is Glenn Douglas Packard, who's an Emmy Award nominated videographer, choreographer, film producer, director, and he happens to be a family member. So I've got a couple pictures of him, and I'm holding it over. No, he's kind enough to do work for me every once in a while. So I said, this is a special week for me.
Yeah.
And he's going to get some footage of me. So because and it may not be for public display ever, but I'll know that when I'm in the home, I can I can throw
fire
it
fire that
and
right
put it on the sizzle reel.
Plus, I'm going to look it on the sizzle reel. Exactly.
And
exactly.
What sizzles better than two fat tubs like that?
I like the way you got dressed. Me and Norm look classy. We're in the green room.
I didn't always wear a jacket. I didn't know it was blazers required tonight. Yeah. I didn't know.
Well, you know, Glenn doesn't have a blazer on.
But he's behind the scenes.
I didn't know this was chaplains and he had a blazer.
Well, this has been a real pleasure because
thanks, Joel.
Corey and I have been doing a podcast. We were us together, first comedians that ever did a podcast.
Really?
It's 2005. We started it.
Nice.
And now it's 2019, and I regret 14 years of not having you on. So we're making up for that today because Norm is one of the greatest comics, best guys I've ever worked with.
Thank you, Joel.
Even before I got to work with you, your name was already a big deal.
Yeah,
really.
And, yeah, that's true. I remember hearing about Norm before.
The first time I saw you, I went, oh, that's what they were talking
about.
This, I've never seen Norm do anything. Look, I don't want to sound like Sammy Maudlin over here. I love this man over here. I feel like, but I honestly, I've never seen you do anything but crush a room every time I've ever seen you or gotten the pleasure to work with you.
Yeah.
And it's, there's a consistency that is extremely admirable.
Thank you, bro.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's hard to build that.
Absolutely. One of the best. If you've never
seen
Norm
Stoltz, a lot of great comics bomb, too.
Yeah, well,
I've never seen a bad.
Yeah, I've never really seen you have a bad. I mean, you would probably know what, in your mind, this should have went this way or this should have went that way.
Yeah.
But I've never seen an audience be like, oh, boy.
Well, every time.
Everyone has a good time.
Every time you do the show, you put it against all 100,000 times you did it. So there's always something that I missed a word or I missed anything. But
you put energy into the room.
Yeah, thank you.
In the right way. Some guys put energy into the room and it's scary.
Yes.
Or it's a little, you're like, cool, bring that down. And you always put the right energy for them to give it back to you.
Thank you.
And that's something I've learned watching.
Why I don't get
a man of your stature and quality.
Thank you.
Well,
I appreciate
what
it.
More
thanks,
can we
Joel.
Say, Norm?
Appreciate
I know,
it, but a lot
to promote or anything that people can see you?
Just go to my website, normstoltz.com.
Okay.
I'm booked.
We'll
I'm
put
booking
a link
in
to
May.
That.
I'm solid through the next 6 months, seven months. So life is good for the Norm Stoltz group.
It sounds good.
Thanks, brother.
Sounds like Norm's fucking on a pile of money.
Yeah.
That's what I would describe.
I'm not a pile of money.
Not a pile of money.
No, I have a wife.
Villages is not cheap,
Norm. I get an allowance.
Come on, Norm.
Let's
be honest.
Next time we'll have you give us a pickleball tutorial. And
hey, if you want to play, I'll tell you what. Yeah. It's a great game. It's a great game. It's addicting. I'm on the patch. I'm trying to cut down to five days a week.
What is pickle? Do I know pickle?
It's tennis. It's a combination between tennis and ping pong. Pretend you're standing on the table. Play with a wiffle ball. And elderly people. They're easy, though. You push, they push them. They break a hip.
Believe me. Look at Corey. He'll be there soon. Look at him. Look at this guy.
All right. Well, come to the Comedy Castle when you can, whenever you can. This is a beautiful venue, whether I'm here or not.
By the time you've heard this, Norm's already come, but you'll be back.
I'll be back.
I'm sure you'll be back.
All right, brother.
I'm sure.
Thanks.
Norm, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Joel.
What an honor.
Thanks, Corey.
All right.
Norm Stoltz. Thank you, Norm. That was fun.
All right.
Getting together on a Friday night. bring in the road equipment.
Yeah.
I like that the first thing he said was, you have such a nice studio, and you hauled us down to the con. And I was like, I don't know that that's the case, Norm. But anyway, thanks to Norm. He's a guy, like I said, that I've wanted to have studio. On. Yeah, I've wanted to have Norm on for years and years. So anyway.
Norm is great if you get a chance to go see him.
Yeah.
If you're in the Villages in Florida and you can ride your scooter over to see him.
Showtime's at 5.
If you're on a Norwegian cruise to Alaska.
Yeah, you know. Norm's great.
Does he do boats?
I don't know how many boats he does. That would have been a good question.
Should have asked Norm if he was
You could have prepared for that interview, but you didn't. And then, you know, he's shooting that documentary whatever.
Norm's great. He don't have to prepare much because he's got
stories. He can go. Yeah, you wind him up, he goes.
He really is a guy I've never seen do anything but, like, put total energy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I said about his show, is that no one can heckle Norm. I think I said in the interview, I said, no one can heckle Norm because he just is talking and he's telling jokes and there's no opportunity for, you know.
It is a machine
gun. Hey, what
gun.
Brings you here tonight? Are we guys on a date, you know?
It's a model of efficiency in comedy in that it's a machine gun.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, if he does any crowd work, it's totally incidental he doesn't even do it.
Anyway, I was in Chicago over the weekend, holiday weekend. And here's what I want to tell you. This is the only note from my vacation that really you will care about anyway. So even if I tell you what I did, you won't give a fuck. But you always dump on me for what I eat and where I go on vacation and all this stuff.
Yeah,
and here's what I'm going to say.
It's not that I wouldn't eat the things you eat.
Yeah.
It's just that there is a limited range of what you will
eat.
Well,
listen what I had. There is a new, Corey, the fast casual restaurant. Mm-hmm. Boom in America is something. I know you've reported on it and you've talked about it. But there is a chain that only exists in two American cities.
Okay.
That is very popular overseas that I've heard lots of things about.
Hmm.
That when I saw one, I told my girlfriend, I said, we are going there for lunch on this trip. For sure, 100%.
It only exists overseas.
It exists in two American metro areas. It exists in the Washington, D.C. area.
Mean Jeans Burgers?
No. So it exists in the Washington, D.C. area. So D.C., Maryland, Virginia. And it exists in the Chicagoland area, Illinois.
Okay.
In the U.K., if you know anybody from the U.K., they will tell you how good this is. There are almost 300 U.K. locations. But the U.K., that's the rub.
It's from like South Africa.
Yes. Do you know what it is, Corey?
I'm blanking on the name of it.
It's Nando's Chicken, Corey.
Nando's Chicken. Thank
I
you.
Had Nando's Chicken.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was cool because I literally didn't think they were in the United States. And while we were sitting there eating it, I go, let me look up where the Nando's are. And that's where they're at. They're
it's a big deal in
D.C.
in the U.K.
In the U.K., it's a really big deal. It is, you people go, oh, that Nando's Chicken is so great, blah, blah, blah. Here's what they do. Well, first, it's fast casual. You walk up, you order, then you sit down, and somebody brings you the food.
Yeah.
And I guess you don't have to tip. I don't know. Yeah. I think they ask you for a tip when you order. I don't think I tipped. I don't know. Maybe I did. The thing about it is that I would describe it, not knowing what it was, as like Caribbean jerk chicken.
Okay.
That's how I would describe it. Now, it turns out it's South African company that is making Portuguese African style chicken, which I think that's the Caribbean, right? Portugal and Africa, that's pretty much the Caribbean, right? Yeah, those two together. Because I've been to like Jamaica. I went to a Jamaican restaurant in New York, and I was like, okay. I get it as like a Jamaican, like it's got a black, red, and green color scheme kind of.
Which
inside
is the, flag
the restaurant,
of South
yeah, well, or Jamaica too, you know, like a lot of that stuff. And so it just kind of felt like that. We sat on the patio upstairs, and it just kind of felt like that. Here's the thing: it's grilled chicken that's marinated, and you pick your marinade, and it goes from really hot to plain, and then there's different. You can get like a lime. My girlfriend got a lime something marinade in it, and you pick the marinade. And you pick your sides, and they bring it out to you. And it was excellent.
All right.
Yeah, and I got the plain chicken, quote-unquote, which still had a little bit of a spice to it, had a little kick to it.
Well, you being
for me,
the big spice aficionado.
And I had her, I think it was mango lime, maybe, and I had some
you
of
had,
that.
You had some of that spicy mayonnaise.
No, it wasn't that. Yeah. It was plain, but, you know, they have it like fire hot down to nothing. And then the sides were really good, too. We had the mashed potatoes, the garlic bread, and did we have the french fries? Everything was great. It was really good.
French fries with your mashed potatoes. All right.
Well, I think my girlfriend got french fries. I got mashed potatoes. And then we sampled each other's food, Corey.
Well.
That's what we did.
Yeah,
Nando's. You should go. It was great.
We went to a very exotic locale of Lincoln Park the other morning.
What'd you have there?
Well, I was making a Facebook Marketplace sale, and we went to Bill's Ham Place.
Bill's Ham Place,
which is it's the dineriest diner.
Yeah.
That you would expect.
Yeah. I love those side of the road ham places because there's always like a big pig on the sign. And uh-huh. stuff. Was it one of those?
There was a pig on the menu and pig paraphernalia in the place. Not a lot.
Yeah.
There was a picture of Mother Teresa and a couple, you know, little pig banks and stuff.
But, yeah.
No, it was a great little diner experience. But Amy got corned beef hash and then they brought her hash browns with it.
Okay. Well, that
and
seems
I was like,
yeah.
Well, you guys are doubling down with the hash browns on the plate of corned beef hash. Which you would normally not. It's a little redundant.
Yeah. We're telling you what's good. All right. Let's get into, should we talk about Chappelle? Why not? Sticks and Stones.
All right.
Now, look, you and I, me for sure, and I'm guessing you, although maybe it's a little different, my social media is 90% comedians.
Mine's probably more about 60 or 70, but it's a lot of comedians.
It's a giant. And comedians saw this latest Netflix special by Dave Chappelle and lost their minds. You can stop doing comedy. Nothing is better than Dave Chappelle's Sticks and Stones. This man walks on water. He's a legend. He's the greatest of all time.
Well, then, some of them did.
I think to me, with the comedians that I follow, and we're not talking about famous comedians.
Depends on your level of woke-itude.
Well, that's the other thing. And then the critics, certain people, really criticized this show. And one of the headlines I heard was, you know, he made fun of the Michael Jackson victims from Finding Neverland. And I read that and I went like, oh, Chappelle sounds like an asshole. Because I think it's pretty clear from watching the show and following Michael Jackson's life and career that, yeah, he liked those boys. I mean, let's be honest. Uh-huh. I mean, come on. How can you not? And Chappelle's like, I don't believe those kids. And you read it and it sounds like the worst thing ever. So I watched it, as you did, and I found that, look, here's the thing about me. I'm never insulted by comedy.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things I think that's really important to think about this Chappelle special is when you take the things that Dave said on his show, you're watching a show, he's live in front of an audience holding a microphone, there's lights on him. When you take those things off a page and you put it on a piece of paper or you put it on a computer screen and people read them in their own voice, it does sound awful. But what people are missing is the goal of those statements was to get laughs.
Well, yeah, it's a comedy special.
And I know I've said it before many times on the show, but like you can't be offended by something when a person is telling you something with the intention of getting laughter. It no longer should have any power to you whatsoever, meaning it shouldn't be offensive to you. You shouldn't think that person is a genius either. You should go, this person's trying to make me laugh and I laughed. So I feel like both sides of this, the people that are offended and the people that think he's God's gift to comedy, are both wrong in their own ways.
Well,
this is a guy standing on stage telling jokes. I watched it. I thought it was largely very good. I thought it was funny. I don't watch a lot of specials. I'm also wondering what else are people watching? If this is the greatest thing anyone's ever seen in the history of comedy, people must be really watching some garbage on Netflix. But anyway,
well,
that's my thought.
How many? Okay, so Dave Chappelle has it's got a $60 million contract or something with Netflix.
Yeah.
Some huge concert. And how many specials does he owe them?
I don't know, but apparently if you don't turn the special off, it starts another special.
And what did he do?
That's like
two or three last year.
I'm not even sure. But yeah, he released like two on one day, and I don't know. Like I said, I don't really watch specials.
So and now I you know, like every other sentient human being, liked the Chappelle Show.
Okay, yeah,
I like Dave Chappelle in general as a comic. I think he's a really good comic. Yeah, he's one of the top comics.
Absolutely, 100%.
This special wasn't his top work.
Really,
I think some of it flopped. I think he aired on a few. In terms of just being like, I will say something intentionally outrageous.
Yes.
I did not like his Louis C.K. defense.
Yeah.
I thought that was in poor taste.
I think that when I watch this thing, and again, I'm not accusing Dave Chappelle of sitting down in a room full of people coming up with a point of view, but it feels like my point of view for this special is whatever you think, I'm going to say the opposite of that, and that's where the humor comes from. And that's what comedians should do.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, some of it did feel a little bit like
it's a okay,
you know, you can disagree with it. You can disagree with them and still laugh. And that's what I don't get with people.
Now, the most active Facebook discussions were on black comics pages.
OK.
And the black comedian community was pretty in general. OK. And here's the thing. I as a white guy, and I'm sure I'll be roasted for having an observation about another culture that is not mine. But I note. And Chappelle talks about it in the fucking show. And it's part of the theme of his show. Black people often refuse to believe that black people did things that were bad.
Yeah.
Because it affects the entire view of the community.
Mm-hmm.
So he previously did a special where he talked about all the times he met OJ.
Yeah.
And that's a recurring, and I'm taking all the funny out of Chappelle's
stuff. Well, we're kind of doing
but
what I said.
I think there's a and the whole thing about the Michael Jackson.
Well, he had R. Kelly stuff in this.
But
and,
as you know, you work on a radio show where they think Kwame Kilpatrick should be freed from prison.
I do.
Okay.
9:10
a.m. The
Detroit
Lions shouldn't have fired Jim Caldwell, even though he lost to the Bengals and missed the playoffs.
Yes.
Because there is this, like, We have to rally behind the fences or the stagecoach or there were no black people on stagecoaches, but what I'm saying, we should form a line, and we will protect black celebrities when they go wrong.
Okay,
white people will throw you directly into the fire.
Right, yeah,
Mel Gibson was punted into the sun by anybody who had an opportunity.
Right, yeah,
and I'm not saying that he didn't deserve it, but white people do not tend to White people will do like, well, the cops were in the right to fire or whatever. They'll make choices based on race.
Right, yeah.
And they'll defend people. Or they'll be like, Zach Zenner's a great running back or whatever. Who's a Lions
this
scrub.
This show does not need any more Lions content than it has already.
I understand.
Please.
But I'm just, you know what I mean? Like, yes. Will white people do that kind of stuff? Sure.
Yeah.
But I do notice it strongly in black culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, R. Kelly, no one was left with an ability to defend.
Not a lot of people defending R. Kelly.
That case was pretty much sealed.
Look,
but guys,
I'm not saying they'll never defend her. I think they might come around. But, you know, Cosby, they defended for a long time.
Yeah.
And then Cosby now.
The guys were defending Chris Brown to the bitter end.
But yeah.
Now, I don't think Dave Chappelle deserves the criticism of the people who did legitimately bad things.
Not at all. He guys telling jokes on stage.
And I thought even, okay, he did a couple things that I didn't, like I said, the Louis thing I thought was a little too dismissive of what I can't describe as anything other than really bizarre behavior from Louis. Or inappropriate behavior. And so I thought him going, Louis, he died in a masturbation accident. I was like, it wasn't an accident. It was an intentional action. And then he did a bit where he was like, I recognize myself as Chinese. That was a little hacky.
Right. Well, that was, he talked about, but, you know, I think in some ways that was both his most offensive joke. He basically says, you know, if I run around acting like I'm Chinese, I can't defend that by saying that's how I feel.
Uh-huh.
Which is a knock of.
But by the way, I don't think anything. Okay, I don't think it was his best special ever or his strongest work.
Yeah,
And some of it felt a little kind of. I can do this because I'm Dave Chappelle.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That special was all based on you know who I am, and I'm famous.
Yeah,
so I'm going to come to you from that perspective.
Which is why young comedians worshiping this is really really bad for comedy in a way because. People are going to think they can go on stage and say whatever they want about trans people, and it's not doesn't work.
I said on a podcast that another podcast I did last night.
Oh, you want to plug that?
No.
Okay.
No. No, it's called Sitting Down with Stand-Ups.
Okay.
It won't be out for another week or
so. Oh, okay, yeah. Maybe next time we'll tell you.
This show will be out before that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, but I was on that, and I said Louis C.K. was bad for comedy. Not aside from his, like, hey, let me whip my crank out backstage,
yeah.
Which is completely gross.
Yeah.
But he was bad for comedy, and then he convinced a bunch of open micers mm-hmm. that they needed to write an hour special every six months.
That was, yeah. That was
and everybody, thing. All these notebook warriors. Now, look, is it good to write jokes?
Yeah.
Yes. Because you right. get the opposite yeah. where you get a guy who's been doing comedy for 30 years, and the last joke he wrote was during the Clinton administration.
Yeah.
And we see that all the time. And that's yeah. bad for comedy.
Right.
Writing jokes is good, but you thinking that you're this fucking incredible genius that can produce mountains of material and you're going to have your third album.
Yeah. Well, we watched a guy. Well, we watched a guy, but we know of a guy. He retired his hour, Corey. Mm. You know the guy I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
You know the guy. He retired his hour. Like in the last 6 months.
I mean, and it was I see like, this all the time.
What do you? I'm like, and I didn't know you had an hour.
No, you don't have. Sometimes people don't have. I know who you're talking about. These people don't have. Yes.
Yeah, that confirms.
Inside
yeah.
jokes.
Yeah, well.
But.
Names redacted.
Uh-huh. He shares the.
And he's not the only guy, but that's the most recent example of a guy who's like,
yeah,
I'm recording this and then I'm retiring this material forever.
He shares
and
it's like he shares the initials with a member of the Justice League.
But my feeling is if you got to retire stuff, maybe you shouldn't have done it in the first place.
Well,
you know, look, you know what I mean?
There's like, also there is all these open micers that feel like every bit they do is some burnished, shining yeah. gem. Yeah. Polished gold, uh-huh. and it's not, and you might not have 20 good minutes, nah. but you're doing an hour,
yeah,
because you saw that one of the elite comedy writers,
yes,
of all time,
yes,
was like, I do a right. year, an hour, and you know what? I don't yeah. think Louis, every time he did an hour, it was all 60 minutes of greatness.
No,
it was probably 35
I don't know,
minutes
I don't really
of goodness.
Watch him,
right?
Okay,
you know, no, and
fair enough.
I'm not slagging Louis as a comic. He's a great comic. Yeah. He's a weird dude. Anyway, back
well,
to
Carlin did that too, and,
yes,
and you know Carlin.
And Carlin also was you know. A fucking genius.
Yeah,
and then there's other guys who do it who have writers.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, Seinfeld does it, but I think he's smart enough to go, I'm not going to do all these specials, so then I don't have to retire this stuff.
Well, I don't
you
know if Jerry does an hour a year.
I don't know if he does it on that.
And I think
schedule
he also
either.
Has a giant catalog of material.
Yeah.
And some of it he'll roll the yes. old stuff through.
But Seinfeld maybe most famously retired his act.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you for the last time. Right after the show ended.
Well, that's fine if you're famous.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing about Chappelle, though, too.
If
you're famous and people know who you are and they're coming to see you or they're clicking on your special because they know you're famous, that's
if you're,
you can get away with a lot more than a guy
if you're
who
passing
nobody knows.
A hat in a Dairy Queen doing your act.
Who books that?
Oh, yeah, I know. Do you get a blizzard with that? You know, is there? No, it's just a single scoop. You get a single scoop, maybe.
That would be.
If you do a really good show, it's a chocolate swirl. But.
You don't get the dip. You're the MC.
Soft,
the features get the dip.
Soft serve. Yeah. Okay, buddy. You're going to work your way up to the blizzard. Anyway, but they all thought they could do an hour. And Chappelle. Can do what the hell he wants because he's Dave Chappelle.
He does what he wants. Yeah.
And I don't know if the material necessarily was the strongest,
okay.
but he is Dave Chappelle, so he has the power to, by his personality, get the stuff over. Mm-hmm. And a lot
yeah.
of it was very funny.
Yeah. yeah.
I think a lot of the special was funny.
Yeah, I again.
And the LGBT material that he did.
Yes.
Which everyone, now there's part of the thing. Okay, so I just posted a picture of, because he's wearing this goofy jumpsuit.
He is.
And to me, it looked like he was on Mystery Science Theater. It was the
he
same jumpsuit.
He looks exactly like that guy.
Yeah. And so I posted a picture and like, who wore it better?
Yeah.
I then got a lengthy diatribe from somebody about how, you know, black trans women are dying in the street. And I'm like, what part of his, which she didn't yeah. watch the special.
Right, yeah. I mean, for long,
and
if you
a
don't
bunch
watch,
of hot takes,
can't criticize.
Hot takes came flying out of the gully. Just boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Out of the canyon.
Well, like I said, I thought when I read the Michael Jackson thing, I was like, oh, this guy's an, you know, and then I watched it and I was like, oh, I'm not offended by this. I don't agree with that. But again, I'm not offended by anything. And when I say that, I shouldn't, even though I think he's wrong,
mm-hmm.
you know, it worked in the context of a stand-up comedy show. It worked.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do?
And nothing Chappelle did was not
yeah.
material.
Yeah.
It was all material. It was yes. all enemy jokes. And right. also, you're not entirely supposed to
right.
take that 100% literally.
Right. He's not running for president of the United States.
Right. So if I did think a couple of them were a little questionable and yeah. didn't hit the target.
Okay.
But it's a good special.
Yes.
He's a great comic.
Yes.
The LGBT material was actually well observed.
Okay.
I've heard a lot more ignorant, stupid, yes. fucking anti-gay material yes. from comics.
Uh-huh.
And famous comics.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard dumber stuff.
Yeah.
His was like thought through.
Yeah.
And had it was a kind of a clever bit.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody gets off Dave Chappelle's jock two steps.
Yeah. Well, it was recorded at the Tabernacle in Atlanta, where I've been. Mm-hmm. Oh. I saw a concert there. I saw The Strokes with Kings of Leon opening, Corey.
Wow.
So you can probably tell the date of that.
Yeah, right.
Just by the lineup. So
well, we saw
there was a day when the Kings of Leon were not as big as the Strokes.
We saw the Kings of Leon early in the career.
We saw
a couple
one
times.
Of their very first tours, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They were opening for The Coral. It's a British band that nobody cares about anymore.
I wouldn't have remembered
I didn't care about The Coral then.
Was it Hope of the States? Were they opening
no, Hope
for
of
them?
The States were good. Hope of the States. Did you go to Hope of
I
the States?
I went to see that.
They too. Were a good band. They broke up.
There were a lot of NME bands that like got real hyped and then... Faith.
Yeah, well, some of them just, you know, never translated to America because it was so weirdly British yeah. and stuff. And I think The Coral was one of those. But yeah, I didn't like them either. But yeah, I saw Strokes and Kings of Leon at the Tabernacle. Probably 2004 or 5, something like that. Anyway, let's move on. We talked about Chappelle. What else do we got here? I guess we're on to other...
Well, what about the Rotten Tomatoes rating of Chappelle?
Oh, yeah. I do have that here. I have all kinds of articles about the criticism of Chappelle, too, but I think we've kind of covered that. Yeah, the critics' rating, 23% for Chappelle positive, 23% positive, so rotten review. And then the audience score, 99% based on 30,846 ratings as we're recording this.
Now, I have been a tomato meter critic.
Yeah.
I think I'm not currently, they're not currently logging my stuff, but
oh.
I could probably apply
those dicks
and put it back up.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a catalog of older stuff yeah. in there, but, so I have been a Rotten Tomatoes critic and you had to apply to them and send them stuff
yeah.
and they had to like approve you from mm-hmm. a venue.
Yeah.
And it used to be kind of hard to get into Rotten Tomatoes, much like everything.
Yeah.
It used to be hard to get into. Now, recently, Rotten Tomatoes, just in a couple weeks, put a big incentive push to basically let in any black woman who's ever written anything.
There's only 13 reviews on here.
And by the way, they stated the intent purpose that they were looking to put women of color into the tomato meter.
Well, I'm going to read you, forget about the names of these people. I'm just going to give you the outlets that gave you a positive, gave them a positive review.
I'm interested in who, okay, because movie reviews, I know the process and who's doing them.
Yeah.
For the most, although they're letting in more and more blogs and stuff
because
the legit.
Watch this. Let me give you these outlets. The positive outlets, Corey.
But TV reviews, I don't know how that works.
Yeah. Well, there's only 13 reviews, which is really small for Netflix stuff. But anyway, Nerd Reactor gave it a positive review. Have you ever heard of Nerd Reactor?
Oh, it's no.
What about World of Real, R-E-E-L, spelling real?
Sounds real, R-E-A-L.
And then there's a, now, I don't want to tell you the name of the reviewer, but you can probably figure it out, that one of the positive reviews is from JeremyJohns.com.
Oh.
So, believe it or not, it was written by Jeremy Johns.
Brother of Jimmy Johns.
What about J-A-H-N-S Johns?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So those are the positive outlets, and the negatives are going to things like Paste Magazine, Vanity Fair, Slate, Salon.com,
well, okay, Slate,
and the National Review.
All right. If it's like Vox or Slate or Salon,
yeah,
those are liberal outlets that are not going to be allowed
yeah,
to...
They're woke.
Well...
Yeah.
And, you know, part of the whole thing...
But are you woke? I mean, but isn't Chappelle woke? That's the thing.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. When did a black guy stop being a minority class in America?
Yeah.
When did it... We used to be that everybody loved Dave Chappelle because he talks real about race and talked real about all kinds of stuff.
And Dave politics. Chappelle doesn't need to punch down, says BuzzFeed News.
Right. Well, I think, I guess it's...
What happened... The cruelty of sticks and stones is a sign of the times, says Salon.
You know, Chris Rock has a fucking bit about I'm famous and I'm still black.
Yeah.
So now apparently Dave Chappelle has transcended his blackness.
Comedian Dave Chappelle recycles tired tropes to hit trans athletes, according to SB Nation's Outsports, Corey.
Well, that's
some of the headlines.
That's a whole nother issue about, you know,
if LeBron played in the WNBA, that was one of the bits.
Well, right.
Because then you've
got people that are non-binary or gender neutral or whatever the fuck. And then they're like, they were born with the body and musculature of a man. And then they're like, I'd like to compete against women.
Yeah.
And but that leads to uncomfortable discussions about the fact that men are physically stronger than women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is a kind of immutable law of science. And yet it cannot be accepted. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this whole, he stepped on the tranny minefield and I just said tranny and now I'm
look out.
Excuse me.
You know,
he fucked with the chicks with dicks, much like Eddie Murphy. And now it's all over for
you know,
him.
America would be outraged if anyone listened to this.
I know.
That's how you know we're not popular.
We need
because no
get,
one's outraged.
We need to get more controversy. I don't know. Maybe if you put up a PayPal or put up a...
that's going to make us more popular. Charging
maybe
people.
If you had a...
putting it behind a paywall is going to make...
No. I'm just... Why don't we...
No, it's always my fault.
Venmo us. Venmo us some money if you're enjoying this controversial content.
Please. Corey's driving to Lincoln Park to sell action figures. For God's sakes.
I know.
Give this guy some money. He's desperate.
I need cash.
How's your organ?
I have not sold that yet, but I'm working on it.
Do you have... You found an organ in the garbage?
I have a... Yes. I have a very high quality.
What kind of organ do you
it's
have?
It's a Techniques.
Okay.
PCM35.
And you're convinced this is a good organ?
I've had it checked out.
Okay.
I've had it checked out.
By the organ guy?
By musicians.
By musicians.
And
they've checked it out.
It's a very quality piece.
Okay. I was on Craigslist the other day. Maybe you've done this too. And I was looking at organs for sale.
Yeah.
Some of them people are giving away. Some of them are $1,500. I can't tell one from the other.
Well, that's
why I don't know that your organ, and I think part of it is that there are large things that people have to move. Now, Ted Moss, the guy who's been on this show many times, tried to give me a piano. I probably told the story on the show when he was here. He was, I got this piano, it's free. I said, okay, how do you move a piano? You call the piano movers. They want $800 to move the piano from his house to my house.
It's an right.
So I have no piano now.
Well, it was a bitch to move the thing when I did it.
It's in your apartment?
No.
Where is it at?
It's in a...
Oh, okay. I know. I actually know where it is.
It's
okay.
In a special location. But
yes, okay. You told me where it is.
But anyway, whatever. I think it's a good... I've had it checked out by musicians, and I've...
Well,
musicians
why don't you put it out on this show that you have an organ for sale?
Well, all right. It's out now. But no, I've been kind of back-channeling, trying to find... I want it to go to someone who's going to use it before I, you know, eBay it or whatever, Craigslist it, so...
All right.
It's got to be local pickup. You can't ship it.
I think if it was worth enough money, people would ship it. You know, I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah, but it weighs 400 pounds. It would have to be.
People will ship it if it's. I mean, I'm not saying this is, but there are things that people will ship.
The shipping cost versus the price would probably flatten out.
Yeah, which is why I think they're hard to get rid of.
Exactly.
If you had to ship a guitar to Europe, you could do that.
Well, this might be why it's in the trash, but look.
It might be.
I think there's enough musicians in the area that I'll find
somebody.
Where
was it in the trash?
It was next to a dumpster.
Like where you live or something?
Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway.
I bet you somebody was probably moving and just went like.
Just sitting there.
Rather than moving this thing, we'll throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well.
Okay.
Double dumbass on them.
Get your organ.
Mm-hmm.
Buy Corey's organ.
That's right. Or PayPal us, Venmo us.
If you donate so much money to Joel Radio, we will give you an organ.
I think the Joel Radio Kickstarter is going to come out any minute now.
The top donor gets an organ.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, if you donate...
The number one...
$2,500 to the Joel Radio Fund.
The angel investor will get organ.
That's right. Top one. Where's Ted Moss? Does he want another organ?
Maybe, you know what? I could ask Ted Moss if he wants an organ. He likes his pianos. He has two.
I'll let Ted come check this out.
All right, good. I should ask Ted.
Ted, come play with my organ.
Get Corey's organ.
That's right. I put that. I did put a like. Do I know any organ players on Facebook? And of course, all the wise asses.
Well, you don't want to be an organ donor, but I'm bummed. Hell.
But anyway, all right. So Chappelle got what was it? 13%?
Well, he's like 33. Oh no! What? Yeah. What was it? I just turned it off. 23% positive on Rotten Tomatoes. And I know I sent you an image I found on the internet. Which I don't even know that we need to go there, but you can.
So conversely, yes. The Hannah Gadsby Nanette.
Yes.
Was the inverse of this, right?
I guess. What did I sent you that image. Do you have it?
Oh, jeez.
And actually, at that point, Chappelle was at 33%. He's dropped since then. But yeah, Nanette was 100% positive from the critics and 54%.
Yeah.
By users, according to whoever put this on Facebook.
Well, look, I hated the Nanette special.
I never saw it.
For exactly almost the same reason that I give the Chappelle. Chappelle was doing stand-up comedy. There was never a point where it wasn't stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Some of it wasn't the best stand-up comedy or didn't really hit the target, but. Hannah Gadsby prefaced her special by saying, I hate comedy and I'm quitting comedy.
Right.
And then she got popular off it.
Yeah.
And now she's going to continue to do comedy.
Yeah.
And it was basically an assault on stand-up comedy and men in general. And it was a political tirade and a TED Talk in the guise of a stand-up special. Yeah. And some of it was stand up, and then some of it was like how much she hates Picasso because he diddled young girls. So it was really, I didn't care for that at all in terms of it being a comedy special. And I thought that the idea of being like, I don't like Neil Hamburger.
Okay.
I don't like this like anti, I hate Tim and Eric.
Yeah.
I hate anti-comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, Andy Kaufman was the only one who really did it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And Andy Kaufman was trying to entertain you.
Yeah.
There's a lot of this, like, I will expose how bad comedy is by doing a mockery of comedy.
Yeah.
And the Hannah Gadsby felt like that to me.
Yeah.
And it was also like, all men are evil.
Right.
And, well, she's like, I don't hate all men, but you're all cocksuckers. Right. And you're bloody, you know, It was like a kind of a tone that was like, well, I'm not, whatever.
All right, let's move on. I didn't see Hannah again. I don't have a comment, but it is funny that it is absolutely completely
flipped. Because of its political content, the reviewers all felt that they had to say what a brave, daring special this was.
Well, critics are in a spot where, you know, when you go against the popular sentiment, not just the popular sentiment, meaning people writing in or emailing or tweeting about, you know, how awful you are. But when you run a review as a critic, which is contrary to the popular opinion of said thing that you're reviewing, I think it's always risky. And I think that a lot of critics, and I know you as a critic, and I've seen I go to these movie screenings with you and I see critics, and critics hang out. And critics talk about the movie when it's over. And I think critics kind of tend to start thinking alike. I think there is a psychological phenomenon where there is a critical mass, and to step outside of the critical mass can make you an outlier, and most people don't want
to
be that.
I try hard to resist that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's definitely a thing.
I think I do. Well, I think a lot of critics do have kind of a similar sensibility, but I try not to.
And
you don't want to be like, what is his name?
It was Rex Reed.
Well, there's Rex Reed, doesn't like anything.
But also, I think Rex Reed is in a position where he sees a lot of stuff real early. I mean, he definitely writes kind of these histrionics.
So he'll see the thing. You're saying he sees it before the critical consensus.
Right, and I think by the time, like, the Metro Detroit critics see a movie, I think they know what the buzz is coming out of the trades and stuff like that. And so a lot of people kind of follow. Or, you know, this was the film festival hit. This won, you know, Toronto or Sundance or Telluride. And so this is a thing we must like.
Well, a lot of those.
A lot of those stink.
A lot of those movies do well in Sundance for that audience.
Yeah.
And then they hit.
Well, exactly.
Then they splat against
but,
the wall.
You know, when Blair, there's a, I where you'd find this now, I don't know, but there was an article about why Blair Witch became what it was. Mm-hmm. It's because they screened it at midnight without telling anyone what it was. And everyone that was at that screening was like, oh my God, mm-hmm. we saw this thing without even knowing what it was.
Right.
And it created this, like, off of one screening. That because if you saw Blair Witch is horrible. It's not scary. It's
well,
not
you
good.
Also
it's,
hear these you hear these accounts.
But it was like literally, you can go back to the genesis, the spark, the big bang that made that movie a giant hit was one screening at Sundance late at night.
Toronto International Film Festival is happening right now.
Yeah.
I've only gone once.
Okay,
It's kind of a hassle.
Yeah,
it's expensive.
Yeah,
If I was getting, you know, someone was paying me,
sure
to. They pay me for the coverage, but not enough to cover the costs, really.
Yeah, right.
If I was at a...
So you go, I'd go and I'd give you this and they'd pay you for the reviews, but if you're putting yourself up and traveling, it's pricey.
It's hard to do.
Yeah.
So you need to really have somebody put you up for it. Or, you know, right. When I do junket stuff or I did junket stuff, that's paid for.
Yeah.
Because you can't afford to put it out of your pocket for most of the stuff. But anyway, so I've gone to Toronto, but it's also you're in lines all day.
Uh-huh.
You got to run to this one and that one and stuff. And you'll never see all the stuff you want to see.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's across town and all this. It's a hassle. There's all these tunnels in Toronto you got to walk under. Anyway, Toronto's going on right now.
Yeah.
And what these film festivals really are buyer's markets for distributors.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes what happens, you'll get really skewed opinions about the commercial. Of a movie, and they'll be like, it got a 10-minute standing ovation at Cannes. And you're like, did it? Did it really?
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood won Cannes.
I
think.
And what's the rating on that?
I don't know. Blinded by the Light won Sundance.
What the?
I don't know.
I hated
I don't know.
I hated every fucking solitary second of that Blinded by the Light. I thought it was well. Oh, wait, we're skipping.
We can go there.
Hold
we'll
on.
Do
you
want to
run
back.
Through the.
We'll go back. No, because those movies suck, and sure.
But, okay, so Joel has a list of the...
I printed out,
of the top movies. All right, I'm just going to do the Rotten
Tomatoes. The 2019
Tomatoes.
Rotten Tomatoes.
The Metacritic.
Yeah.
I would say a good 60% of these didn't get a release in Detroit.
No, not at all.
We're the 10th biggest market, and these didn't come.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, Metacritic, how about this? The number 2 rated movie for Metacritic for 2019 so far? Came out in 1979.
It's the Apocalypse Now recut.
It's the Apocalypse Now recut.
Yeah.
They wanted me to talk about that on NPR.
Yeah.
And they called me and I'm like, well, one, how many cuts of this have been?
Exactly, yes.
What's this cut going to change?
Yes.
And I'm not actually a big fan of Apocalypse Now.
I have the Blu-ray set that came out a few years ago, which I still haven't watched all of the special features and everything on that set, which was, you know, Redux and the original cut. And now they're selling this new cut. In a whole nother set with more new stuff on it. And I go, you know, I think I'm good. So anyway, do you want to read those? Should we just do the Blinded?
Well, I'm just going to give you some of the list. Okay. The number one Tomatometer review is
number one.
Avengers Endgame.
Oh. I mean, okay, thumbs up to that, but not a great movie. I mean.
It's good for what it was.
It's good for what it was,
but it's
absolutely.
Not a great movie.
Thumbs up, but
number two, a movie I despised, Us.
Didn't see it. I have it. I'm going to be watching it soon, though. I will.
Toy
watch
Story
it
4, whatever.
Didn't see.
Booksmart was good.
I will give Booksmart a thumbs down, even though I appreciate what it was trying to do. I was kind of bored with it. I thought it failed.
Number 5, 95% Beale Street, if Beale Street could talk. Snoozer for me.
It was Oscar bait that was in last year's thing, so I don't even count that as a 2019 movie.
Spider-Man Far From Home was okay.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. But again,
now this is to me the best one on the list is The Farewell.
Okay, you talked about it. I haven't seen it.
Number 7, that's a great movie.
Okay.
That should be Oscar nominated.
Okay.
Shazam was
again,
fine.
It's not
it
unlike
fine.
Avengers or Spider-Man.
I don't think it's a 91%. I think it's a 75%.
Well, it's 91% of the people went like, that was all right. That's all
I mean,
that
Shazam
that means.
Did decent at the box office.
That's why I think
and was entertaining, but the classification of what makes a fucking movie art and considered for serious consideration about what it means, and this was, did I sit through it and not get bored? Are two
different
things.
I think Metacritic, even though it has a little more far-flung things that weren't didn't go as wide is at least weighted on how much they liked it versus whether you just simply liked it or didn't.
So anyway, they got Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Apollo 11, a documentary that like three people saw.
It's on Hulu right now.
Rocket Man, which was a big hit.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second.
They Shall Not Grow Old, which is a Peter Jackson documentary of
World War One.
He colorized World War One footage and put it in 3D.
Okay.
Very interesting to
watch.
Sounds
like I'd like that. I haven't seen it.
It was very interesting to watch, but never like you're never going to want to see it again.
Okay.
John Wick.
Yeah.
Ash is the Purest White. You've never seen this.
I know.
Amazing Grace.
Didn't see that.
Knock Down the House. I don't even know what that is.
That's an Andrea Cortez Octavio documentary. Is that her name? That's what that is, though.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
It's the women that, you know, the squad.
That's on Netflix now.
Yeah, I think so.
I think they got lucky, and they were, like, doing a documentary on her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she actually won the race that they didn't think she was going to win.
That's what that movie is. I haven't seen it.
All right, I haven't seen that either. It might be interesting.
Yeah.
Here's where they're bullshitting. Here's where they're bullshitting.
They were bullshit.
Everything else on this list of the top 23 is...
Slip it over. There's more on the other side.
Oh, okay. But everything else in this is in the 90s.
Yeah.
The rating, or a couple 80s. This comes in at a 78, and yet is number 18. The films below it are 91, 93, 98, 96, and 92.
Okay.
But somehow number 18...
I think it's weighted by the number of critics or the quality. I'm not sure why, but...
At a 78%, and this is too high, Captain Marvel...
Yeah, it wasn't that good.
Which is a thoroughly mediocre Marvel movie.
It was literally like, watch this to set up Avengers, and there's really certain other purpose.
I mean, Stan and Ollie I liked, but it's real pokey.
Okay, yeah,
I mean, whatever. This has not been a year in which I've been like, oh my God, there's so many great movies.
No, I mean, it is. We're going into the fall season here, so.
They didn't even get one of my favorites of the year so far, The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Okay.
Didn't even make the
That's one I should watch.
The
And Peanut Butter Bandit is getting good reviews.
Peanut Butter Falcon, yeah.
Falcon, Peanut Butter Falcon, yeah.
Which All is, right. you know... If you, it's got wrestling cameos.
I read a review from Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer.
Yes.
Dave Meltzer signed my book.
Wow.
You had the book that you had in your possession for about a decade that you returned to me. I got signed by Dave.
Oh, the obituaries book?
The tributes book, the first issue. Yeah. All right. Well, let's while we're ranking things, let's rank the boomer music movies, Corey. We've both seen Blinded by the Light.
Ooh.
I'm giving that a thumbs up, although I get why some people wouldn't like it. There are cringy moments in it. I get that. And, you know, if you don't like Springsteen, you know, my girlfriend didn't really like Springsteen and then said, hey, I listened to Springsteen the whole next day on the way home from work. So I go, okay, work for you. Let's rank them. And I saw Rocket Man, which, well, we'll get to that, but I thought Rocket Man was good. Let's rank them from the bottom up, Corey. I think are there four or five of these?
Are we
including Motley Crue's The Dirt in this?
You know, I didn't watch that.
Okay, let's not, because I think that's a different era.
I
think we're talking about a Beatles movie, a Queen movie, a Springsteen movie.
Okay.
And an Elton John movie.
All right.
Let's start with the bottom, number four.
Blinded by the Light. Hated every second of it.
I'm saying number four, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh.
What did you hate about Blinded by the Light?
It was mawkish.
Okay.
It was schmarmy.
Yeah.
It was mundane and predictable.
It was a coming-of-age movie.
It was like, this guy's like, Bruce Springsteen changed my life.
Yeah.
It had, okay, you know how there's the magic Negro?
Yeah.
This had the magic Cockney. There was literally a guy that was like an old man in a cap,
yes.
A woolen cap,
yes. War II veteran.
The cabbie hat,
yeah.
And the tie and the vest.
Yes.
And
a pensioner.
Yeah, a pensioner.
Yes.
And his role in the movie was to tell the lead, you're a good boy.
Yeah.
Off, oh, right. Don't listen to critics. They'll think you've got what it takes to be a good, you be a riot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all the fucking guy did.
Yeah.
They should have handed him a fucking broom. He could have been Bagger fucking Vance. It was like the magic Cockney. It was so fucking dumb and hacky. I don't like Bruce Springsteen's music even less after listening to this. I don't understand that shit at all. Had no appeal. It was torture.
It's on that list. I forget where it is.
That movie
in the top 30.
Was fucking torture.
Okay.
I mean, the first time, okay, like the first time he listens to like Blinded by the Light.
Yeah.
And the lyrics appear on the screen.
I think it's Prove It All Night is the first one. Oh, but anyway, okay.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Well, they did that gimmick the one time and I went, yeah, all right, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Then they did that gimmick like five times.
Yeah.
And it's about a schnook who uses...
Promised Land might have been the first one.
Uses the poetry of another man to propel him forward in his life.
Yeah.
And to make people appreciate and try to get a girlfriend. I hated that fucking movie.
Was your heart not warm when they showed that the real guy had seen Bruce Springsteen 500 times? And
no, because they think
stuff?
You're delusional
and
fucking...
successful.
I think you're a fucking mongoloid maniac if you watch the same act 5,000 times!
I've seen him 15 times.
Good Lord, are you broken?
All right. Okay, so Blinded by the
Light. I like nothing enough to see 15 times.
All right.
I hate repetition. What am I, a toddler?
It's not the same show, though. That's why people go in a lot of ways.
It's not the same show.
All right.
How many times did you follow fish around the country?
Zero. Okay.
How many Jimmy Buffett shows have you caught?
I have.
People are broken
inside. Bohemian Rhapsody at the bottom of the list because I thought it was a whitewash. I thought it was an inaccurate look at Freddie Mercury. I thought it was a very nice story, but it wasn't a true story. And there was too many of those scenes where, you know, a guy walks into the room and, what's that bass line? Okay. All right, now we've got Another One Bites the Dust. And all these sort of the origin of the song sequences, which are really annoying in biopics. And we've certainly seen them in enough of these movies.
They go and they go, hello, I'm Brian May.
Yeah.
Or like they announce their whole
name. What's your name? Yeah.
Or they're like, I am Amit Erdogan from Atlantic Records.
Yeah.
Or whatever. It was like, it was a hackneyed, lame biopic.
And I know people loved it. And boy, I
thought
it was.
Those people have no taste.
Because, you know, there's a BBC documentary, like a biography of Freddie Mercury. That's great. Which still, Freddie Mercury still comes off as a great man, even if you watch this documentary. But they don't whitewash the things. They don't change, you know, the time. Like, Freddie Mercury did not know he had AIDS when he did Live Aid. Yeah. And that is for some people like, oh, to know that he had AIDS. You know, the day before Live Aid, he gets the news and he breaks it to the band and they go, we're going to have this concert of our lives. And it's like, the truth of the matter is that they were playing stadiums all over the world before they did Live Aid.
I didn't think Rami Malek's performance was all that.
No, I didn't. I don't think he looks that much like Freddie Mercury.
They put some teeth on
him. Stupid teeth.
Wasn't good.
No.
Very, very mediocre.
All right, let's give us the number three, Corey. I'll let you go first.
Oh.
Is it Bohemian Rhapsody?
What were our choices?
Well, you have a Beatles movie.
Uh-huh.
And you have a Elton John movie.
It would have to be Yesterday.
Yesterday, I agree with you, at number four.
Would be number, was it three or four?
Three or four.
No, wait. Four was Blinded by the Light.
For you.
Oh, okay.
And I had Bohemian Rhapsody at four.
Oh.
So that means you liked Yesterday less than Bohemian Rhapsody. It's better than Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, okay. Well, I was confused that we're doing these in order.
Reverse order.
Then I would put Bohemian Rhapsody as the second worst.
Okay, yeah, exactly. Okay.
Okay.
And I would say Yesterday is the second worst. And here's why that is because that premise, it's a very nice sci-fi...
Mm-hmm.
Twilight Zone-y premise that really can't carry a full movie,
nor
does it actually, because it is taking place in some version of the real world, doesn't hold up to any scrutiny whatsoever. No. And so...
And they did inexplicably stupid things with it for jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, in this world, okay, this guy gets bonked on the head, all the lights in the world go out for like 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Guy gets hit by a bus.
Yeah.
Wakes up in the hospital, nobody else remembers who the Beatles are.
Yeah.
There's your premise.
Yeah.
But somehow, no one also knows what a cigarette or a Coca-Cola is in this world.
Yeah,
two things that have, other than their enjoyment of them, nothing to do with the goddamn
Beatles. Never explained, but again, it's like, are you going to suspend disbelief? And I guess you get to a point where you don't want to suspend disbelief, you know. And I also thought that this movie, its use of music, I thought was probably even the weakest of the four. In the sense that, you know, it's all covers that...
They weren't that good covers.
They're not that good of covers. And they're also like... I also fail to believe that in 2019, which the movie still takes place in 2019, that a guy strumming Let It Be on a guitar is suddenly going to get you on a talk show. even if no one's ever heard Let It Be. No. I don't believe in that fallacy. I think the Beatles, while the greatest rock and roll act of all time, which I have no problem saying it because I'm a huge fan and they're my favorite act ever, I do believe that the Beatles' success was a product of its time. And I think if the Beatles came around today, I don't think they'd be as successful. I don't think they'd be any less great, but I don't think they could not possibly set the world on fire today. And even if they had never existed, it's a different world.
Well, and it was also insulting and demeaning to the Beatles.
Yeah.
In terms of their success was also visual.
Yeah, cultural, yeah.
Because they were like, this guy's like a dope. They're like, is there a way you can look less like an asshole?
Yeah, well,
you look like a dopey. They were like, you know what I mean? Like, there's part of it is like the marketing where they're like, you look like a dopey schmuck.
He looks like a subway busker.
And the Beatles' whole thing was that they were resistant to marketing.
Yeah.
They had their own style.
Yes.
That I mean, part of it came from,
Brian Epstein, yes.
No, what's her name? The photographer, Astrid.
Yeah, a little bit, but that wasn't even what made them famous.
She gave them the haircuts and the whole thing.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they had a whole style, and there's even, you know, they dictated their own style.
Yeah.
And their visual appeal.
They set trends.
They were four cute guys. Mm-hmm. The synergy of the four. This is one guy. There's four guys, and everybody had a favorite, and the explosion, and the... Britain had been under, after it was in the post-war, and they were all
right.
They were all on meat shortages and the line, you know,
and for the States
recovery.
President Kennedy had just been murdered 2 months before they hit the American shores. So
there's a vast amount of it. There would have been maybe better with Elvis.
Yeah.
Although if Elvis hadn't existed, the changes to the world would have been huger.
Yeah, I mean, who knows?
They didn't really tell you. They were like, the Beatles are gone and it sucks.
Yeah.
But they don't explain to you really what changed in the world.
There are Rolling Stones, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't
know. Bowie, Elton John, Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
We could live. Yeah. I mean, like, I love the Beatles.
Yeah.
But they didn't make the point of why the Beatles were that important.
The movie just needed to be maybe more... The love story was real dopey. I read an article about what they cut out of this.
Yeah, there was a subplot with another girl.
He went to when he became famous, he went and got like the Hollywood girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
And then the Hollywood girlfriend angle was cut out to make it more of a dopey.
I thought the lead guy was a schnook.
He was fine.
Weird that we had two movies about the Indian subcontinent hip to boomer music.
An Indian and a Pakistani.
Yeah.
One guy loves Beatles, one guy loves Springsteen.
Didn't like either of those.
So then do you have, so then my number two would be Blinded by the Light, and your number two would be Bohemian Rhapsody. Rocket Man?
Yeah, no, wait.
You're down to Rocket Man and Bohemian Rhapsody as best. All
right. Well, then I guess I'd have to bump up Yesterday.
Is better than.
Into third. So, okay. Blinded by the Light, Bohemian Rhapsody, then Yesterday.
Okay, Yesterday's your number two. This.
Yes.
Yeah, and so we both liked Rocket Man the best.
Yes, which has its own problems.
Which does, but I thought Rocket Man was easy to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that the kid, actually, there's two kids.
Edgerton.
Yeah.
Taron Egerton.
I think the kids that played young Elton John were fantastic. I thought that what's her name? Who's the mom? Bryce Dallas Howard did a great job as the mom.
Yeah,
and I thought that they did make some of these actual like singing and dancing musicals, which I guess Blinded by the Light did
Blinded
that for
Light
one or two numbers.
Had a couple music numbers, and they were almost vaguely Bollywood like.
Yeah,
in that everybody in the street starts dancing.
Rob Brighton was singing. That made you cringe, I'm sure.
Rob Brighton with the dumb wig. Which is dreadful.
I
like Rob Brighton in the.
My guess is Rob Brighton probably likes Springsteen.
I think Rob Brighton's a corny motherfucker outside of the context of the Steve Coogan.
He's a guy from The Trip and the other Trips.
He's real good in the Steve Coogan movies, but otherwise he's probably a real cornball.
Did you hear a Trip to the Store? That's coming out soon. They're just the budget is shrinking for those.
A Trip to Cornwall.
Yeah, it's a trip to the a trip to the shop.
Yeah.
Trip to the dry cleaner.
They went to the chippy. They went to the chippy up the street. On the high street.
Actually, if they get it's going to be a trip to the doctor, a trip to the pharmacy,
a trip to the funeral home.
All right. So Rocket Man, was pretty good. And again, if you're saying rank your enjoyment of the music of these acts, I'd say Elton John's my least favorite of the four.
Oh, see, I like Elton John's music.
I do, but it's my least favorite of the four.
I mean, okay.
I'm going Beatles, Springsteen, okay. Queen, Elton right. John in that order.
I mean, I'm obviously a Beatles fan, not as big a Beatles fan as you.
Yeah.
But I am a Beatles fan. Okay. I do love the Beatles.
Yeah.
But I didn't like the way they were presented.
No, I agree.
In that, yeah. The covers that they did in Rocket Man mm-hmm. were, Taron Egerton actually sang.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is always good in a biopic.
Yeah.
I know people go, well, blah.
Well,
okay, I think it sucks when they overdub the guy.
Apparently Bohemian Rhapsody used some Freddie, what's the actor?
Rami Malek.
And then there's a guy who like is a Freddie Mercury impersonator. Mm. That's really good. And they kind of used a
obviously, okay, well, what was the stupid the James Brown one they just used?
Yeah, James Brown. Yeah.
I understand these right. tracks. Everybody's heard them 1,000 times. But if you're doing a biopic and you're not even fucking doing the singing,
yeah,
what's the fucking point?
Yeah,
like Walk the Line, they redid those songs,
yeah,
and they did a really good version of them, including Detroit's own Dan John Miller is one of the Tennessee Three.
Okay,
I can't remember if he's Luther or the other guy.
Oh,
but,
okay,
he was in the band.
Yeah.
And you know, Joaquin Phoenix sang, and so did Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah.
And they did that. That's the point of a biopic. If you're going to do the goddamn thing, the singing performance is part of the show.
Yeah.
And in Fosse Verdon, Sam Rockwell can fucking dance.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's great.
He did a great job.
So Michelle Williams.
What's your thoughts on the Backbeat Band?
That was pretty good.
Dave Grohl and.
Yeah, it wasn't the actors doing
those,
it.
Yeah, it was
it
all
was
those...
like, wasn't it one of the Afghan Wigs? Was
well, it was Greg Dooley,
Greg
was
Dooley
John.
Was in there. Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to remember who McCartney was, but Dave Grohl.
But those
was
weren't
in that
the guys
band.
Playing the parts.
No, exactly.
And Buddy Holly's story, you know, he sang and all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, Gary Busey.
If you're doing a fucking biopic, it should be simple. But so often they blow these biopics.
Yeah, so Rocket Man was good. I'm late to the party, but it was good. All
right. The visualization of the songs was pretty good. I mean, I didn't like that they tried to tell you Elton John had no fun.
Yeah, that was a little...
They're like, the guy's coming out to Dodger Stadium in like 10,000 sequins.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, don't tell me you didn't enjoy this ride.
I liked... Now, usually this would be awful, but I liked the end credits. Or the
where
final,
they showed him.
Well, no, it was but there was also like the I'm Still Standing music video.
Yes.
Where they actually put Taron Egerton in the actual music video.
Right.
I guess because it was shot on film, they could restore it to look like the movie. Because Bruno Tamioli from Dancing with the Stars, your favorite show, Corey.
You know,
the gay Italian judge. Is one of the background dancers in that video. It's a little trivia thing, but you see that and you're like, oh. There he is.
When is the Bruno Tamioli?
Well, it's I'm working on the film.
When is that bullshit?
If you
show
donate
come
to
back.
Paper. It's they've announced the lineup for it, and who cares?
I know Sean Spicer's on it.
You literally don't know who some of those people are, and I don't say you don't know or I don't know. We all, anyone listening to this, will not know some of those people because they're just so far removed from being stars.
I was complaining the other day. That summer TV, we're past Labor Day and they're still doing America's Got Talent.
Yeah, they are.
And I believe that much like wearing white, there should be no America's Got Talent or Big Brother.
They did America's Got Talent in the winter, by the way. They did a whole season. They've done 2 seasons this year because they did the winners tournament of champions.
You know, the ABC's got the retro game shows.
I watched some To Tell the Truth last night.
There was Holy Moly, the putt-putt show that we watched.
Pee-wee Herman showed up as a luchador.
No.
That was last night.
On what?
To Tell the Truth.
Oh, God.
You know, they had one of the guys was from, like, who's the real luchador from Lucha Vavoom, which is like an L.A.
Lucha
thing. And they had a big fat Mexican guy, and then they had an athletic black guy. But they were all under masks, and they had the real skinny guy in like a sombrero.
And it was Paul
Rubens.
And
then it ended up being Paul Rubens, yeah.
Wow.
We ruined that show for you.
Well.
There you go.
Boy, you ruined an Anthony Anderson vehicle for me.
A repeat of To Tell the Truth. So. I've ruined. I think it was a repeat.
But you know what I mean? That's summer programming. And when the fall rolls around, when football season starts, get that the hell out of my life.
All right.
And then I realize that what we're going to get now for the real TV season is Dancing with the Fucking Stars.
Yeah.
American Idol and The Goddamn Voice.
Probably.
TV's terrible.
It's terrible. Well, that's why you got to stream stuff. I literally think that this year might be my favorite year ever for television. And I consider television, Hulu, and HBO, even though some of those things are probably movies by the strict definition of what's on them, or miniseries or whatever. But I really feel like this is the best year. Am I wrong about that? Or have you not given enough thought?
I don't know if I'd have to look and see what came out, what season.
Well, I mean, shit.
I mean, there's a universe of good things.
Yeah.
And then your goddamn networks are running this bullshit.
It's really bad.
Slop.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are we, the 70s? Like, network TV in the 70s was terrible.
Yeah, but it's also like, I don't know. I guess what they're figuring out is that the audience for over-the-air television
are old and dumb.
Are people that, you know, aren't sophisticated, meaning they either don't have the money or the means or the ability to get streaming services or cable television.
It's funny.
And so they're going to sit there and they're going to, or, you know, it's teenagers or it's, you know, I don't know.
It's like TV's better than it's ever been and none of it's on the network.
You need to pay to see what's good.
I saw a preview, and they are doing the previews for the fall shows.
Yeah.
And I saw a preview for a show, Michael Sheen.
Yes.
It's like, I don't know what the name of the show is, but they should be called My Daddy the Serial Killer. Because it's like FBI profiler whose father is a serial killer.
And Michael Sheen is the
Michael Sheen's
father
the killer.
And
yes.
Yeah. Oh.
And they're like, he's a notorious serial killer, but
seems
a good,
like a spoiler.
But a family man. No, and it's like, dad's behind bars, but the son goes to him.
Oh.
For, it's like Hannibal Lecter. But it's like My Daddy the Serial
Killer. I'm going to learn from my father.
Yeah. And I'm like, who the fuck is going to watch that dumb shit?
Yeah.
But that show is mystifying to me that anyone care to watch that.
All right. Well, let's get into some of these streaming things. And I think we're going to end up tabling some of this for the next show. But there's so much. But The Boys, maybe the best comic book thing I've seen in a really long time. Corey, you are morally against watching this show that's on Amazon Prime. You have a problem with it. That most people won't have a problem with, but therefore you still haven't watched it.
I read the comic books, so I know what it's about, and it's apparently pretty on the nose with the source material. And I got, by the end of the comic, I mean, I didn't actually probably read all of the comics, but I read a good chunk of them, and I got kind of worn out, and because it's a very, very cynical take.
Yeah.
And I got depressed. And I feel like the show I didn't want to watch that either.
Well, you should watch it because it's probably the best TV show of the year, one of them. I mean, I think within its genre, I think it's great. As much as I like.
And then they're going to do that Watchmen.
They're doing Watchmen on
HBO.
And
I'm probably going to go, oh, this is going to annoy me too.
Well, I liked the Watchmen movie a lot, like way more than I thought I would.
Yeah, well, you don't like superheroes.
I don't. And I really
and
like
I
Watchmen.
I think you like the negative takes on them.
I thought The Boys was better than Watchmen.
Yeah,
Boys, you really should watch The Boys. I can't imagine. I know that you're cynical and you don't want to watch it.
Well, no,
or you feel like you know the story.
The show is cynical, and I don't want to be cynical.
No, I don't. I don't think that it is. I think you'll enjoy it. I think it's very well done. Yeah. I think it is done by people who have your opinion.
Here's a real.
It's a show made by guys your age, made for you, and yet you're rejecting it because you feel like it's.
No, I just am familiar with the material, so I don't know. You know what I mean? I've already read the story.
Yeah, but it's. I know that the story is not identical note for note.
Right.
The characters are different. I'm sure in adapting these television, there were certain guys with powers that they couldn't put in there and whatever. And you know, it's just really well done. It's shot well. It's really great. Maybe the best Amazon show. For originals,
Amazon shows are a mixed
bag. I love The Grand Tour, but I know that's not for everybody. So
I
like
The Tick.
I never saw The Tick.
I like The Tick, and The Tick is also it's a satiric thing, but it's goofy,
right?
But it does have a little bit of kind of shits on.
And I like Jack Ryan, but again, would I say that was great?
And,
not really, but
Man in the High Castle has real good stuff, and then it kind of they switch showrunners, so it's got weak spots.
Yeah.
It falls apart a little bit, but. That's pretty good.
Yeah, but I think, seriously, I'm going like, this is...
Transparent is okay until you get...
Yes, I enjoyed some of Transparent.
Transparent is... But the characters are so goddamned grating.
Well, let's move on to the next show with grating. Season 3 of GLOW hit Netflix, and I know you've... Did you finally finish that? I know you were struggling to get through
it. We did not.
You and your wife.
We still have some to watch. Well, it's, you know, also... with the streaming.
Yeah.
It's basically, we got to wait to watch stuff with her.
Yeah, well, I do too.
And then
I,
she decided same she was behind a season or two on Orange is the New Black. So now yeah. she's been binging all of those.
Oh, God.
And, I mean, that show.
Can't you just go in the other room and play with your organ?
Well, I do.
You know?
What I'm saying is, we end up not watching stuff together because she's watching her
well,
stuff.
You could be watching The Boys while she's watching. Is she going to want to watch The Boys?
No, nah, not really. It? Probably not.
No, you should watch The Boys.
There's some stuff we will not. There's some stuff we watch together.
Yeah.
And some stuff we know we're not going to watch.
I don't
watch
know if anymore. I can talk about Glow in the way I want to talk about it if you haven't seen the whole thing.
Like, is it the ending?
I don't know that it's an ending. It's just, this is a show. We all really like season one of Glow. And not just because of wrestling. The wrestling angle, or because we're fans of Marc Maron or whatever, and Alison Brie.
The characters were interesting.
Yeah, it was a fun show. It had a goal where, you know, it was the underdog story, mm-hmm. the fish out of water story. It had all those little elements to it. Season two, they didn't feel like they really had a lot left to say. They were still telling that story that they told in season one, but it would kind of go off on its own little tangents, and a lot of the secondary cast members became more featured in some of the episodes. By the time you get to season three, like, there's an episode that Ruth has, like, two lines in. Yeah. You know, that's Alison Brie. I mean, they're just, like, they are going, and it's really just become, these are women with problems. I don't believe there was any in-ring wrestling until the fourth episode.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like, if you're watching it for the wrestling, you didn't even get that. The whole thing was just like, it's almost like one of those shows that went from being a comedy to being a drama.
Right.
Like, is that possible? I mean, I know it always had those elements of real life, but Jesus Christ, they're all, you know, their relationship with men, and then two of the girls are dating and they're not getting along. And
here's a popular misconception. Here's a popular misconception about me.
Yeah.
People think that I'm this miserable, cynical guy.
Yeah.
Because I.
That's what I tell them.
I take. Yeah, I know, but like, you knowing me personally, knowing me better, right? I actually generally don't. I'm not like one to brood or sulk. I might bitch and moan about.
Yeah.
I might complain,
right,
or get angry about mm-hmm. stuff. But I have great disdain and distaste for drama.
Yeah,
or not drama, but mopiness.
Yeah.
Amy was watching Mr. Robot.
Yeah, I never.
I would rather hit my dick with a mallet. Maybe I'd rather have Gallagher hit my dick with a sledgehammer.
Oh, God, yeah. Well.
Than watch the fucking any show that's like,
give me $50, I'll fucking hit your cock. Yes, we'll put it right there.
I like a show where people have problems, you know, or they're dealing with the issue. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like a show where it's like, what is real and what isn't.
Yeah.
And I'm bummed out about existence.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't like it. I don't want it. I want get to the joke. Punch, punch, punch. Bang, bang, boom.
Yeah.
I mean.
But I feel like this.
And Glow lost the plot a little
bit. But Glow is sort of like, it went from being a story about women trying to be successful in wrestling to my boyfriend doesn't love me. And, uh-huh. you know, my husband took my baby.
Well, there's been that all along.
But it's like, I think the elements that people liked about that show got de-emphasized so they could try to be more poignant or tug
they don't actually, because it's made by women and they don't actually care about wrestling.
I get that.
They don't.
I get that.
To the point where in the third season, they're not even really wrestling. They're doing a...
They do one episode that is almost all wrestling, and that's pretty much the only episode where there's
but
wrestling.
But they even, in a bullshitty way...
Yeah.
So the real Glow...
Yes.
The original Glow was a television series, and it was shot in a casino.
Yeah. And I think it was in Atlantic City, though, wasn't it? Yeah.
Florida or Atlantic City or something.
Yeah.
And it was shot in a casino, and the casino owner was like, well, this is good publicity. We'll have, it's basically an advertisement for the casino.
Uh-huh.
There were AWA shows that were done in casinos and stuff. There were sometimes casino wrestling.
Like AWA did Vegas, and I think Glow did Atlantic City. But in this season,
we went to Vegas, but they're not doing a television show. They're doing a live Vegas show.
Yes.
So it's not even really like the wrestling's immaterial.
Yeah.
It's like they're doing their stupid skits.
Yeah.
And occasionally they wrestle.
Yeah, it's the whole thing just, to me, lost the plot in the classic sense. Literally lost the plot. And then also, you know, lost the plot figuratively, meaning like, hey, this used to be fun and I felt good after watching it. And I got a laugh out of those wacky glow girls. And now it's kind of like, you know, Mark Maron's having a heart attack. And plus the thing also has like, it's now 1986 and we have to watch the Challenger explode and get all mopey about that. And there's an AIDS crisis in America.
Well, okay, that
and
was
we're going to, you know.
Okay, that was a funny bit that they
turned. Yeah.
Okay, so like they're on TV during the Challenger explosion doing a wrestling promo.
Mm-hmm.
And which didn't really seem right. But anyway, they're doing a wrestling promo on the local TV and the Challenger blows up.
Yeah.
Which was a funny scene.
Yeah.
Then Ruth gets real like heavy with it.
Yeah.
It's more depressing characters.
Yeah, it's just, it's so
the actors
blown.
Are good. The actors are
they
good
are,
on the show.
Yes.
Betty Gilpin, all the lead actors. Maron is playing Maron.
But he's fine. Maron's being typecast now, but that's okay.
He's very much.
He's not going to have the range anyway. It's fine. You're doing a good job, Mark.
Yeah.
More tits than ever.
But I've already
that's the one positive is like, hey.
Well, there are tits.
There's lots of tits.
I have already dug enough of a hole on this
it's fine.
To say what I feel.
It's fine. I'm making a joke about the tits.
I have a complaint.
The show's not worth watching for the tits.
Well, I have a complaint about Glow, and I have a complaint about other television programs, like Orange is the New Black, that I feel don't work for me as a heterosexual
man. Okay, yeah.
And then I think you know what I'm talking about.
If the only reason you like Glow is because you want to watch women be empowered, well, then that's a bullshit biased opinion anyway. The fact of the matter is this is boring television, and even women should dislike it. And the woman I watched this whole season disliked it anyway. So there you go.
Well, because the story's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
The story is spinning in a circle.
It's over.
It becomes kind of side ventures into whatever.
I described watching the final episode of this is the last episode of Glow that I will ever see. I don't know if they're making more Glow or not.
Yeah.
But I think I've seen the last episode that I will ever see.
You know, Netflix is
basically... That's my review.
Netflix has recently announced that they're not like... They really only want shows to go two or three seasons.
Yeah. They don't. I think they don't want to pay the fees.
And
you know,
there's a diminishing returns for them after I think everybody watches the three seasons. And they're like, oh, that's cool.
Well, I think the risk is
Love.
Like,
it's a show I really
Love was fantastic.
A show I really liked.
Yeah, great show.
Kind of ran out of steam.
But they did. It was pretty consistently good from the beginning to the end. Yes.
But in terms of like actually having a real place to go with the story.
Well, they finally fell in love. They needed to do that.
And by the end of it, you were like, they were a happy couple.
Yeah.
And so there wasn't much more meat on that bone.
Yeah. But that was a great show. Did three seasons. But I think they know now that, hey, people aren't going to cancel their Netflix just because the show that they liked ended. I think that was a big fear where, you know, we'll have to make this forever now. And then they realize, you know, we don't. Well, people will move on. I think networks get caught in that trap, if anything, right? I mean, where it's just too lucrative. I think the Netflix model doesn't, you know, you're not relying on advertising where you can get a really high rate because you have friends or, you know, whatever, The Office. And so you kind of drag these shows out to where they're not even good. Now, granted, Glow's not good, but I think that's more of a decision more than I think they made bad choices.
Well, you also get this thing where you're like, well, this show's we're going to do a third season. Well, let's let so-and-so direct.
Alison Brie directed some of these.
Let's let the cast
one
direct.
Of these. Yeah.
And then you get a little bit of mission creep.
Yeah.
And you lose the point.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. HBO, Euphoria was really good. That ended. I know you never liked it, but.
Hated every second of it.
It did end good. It was a very buzzy show.
Well, that's another show where everybody's depressed and heavy.
Yeah.
And they're hot people fucking, and they're like, this sucks.
Yeah.
I'm miserable having sex with hot girls or whatever.
I enjoyed watching that one.
That
was a good show. And then The Righteous Gemstones, the new Danny McBride vehicle. You're not a fan of that.
It's the worst Danny McBride vehicle.
Well, I think towards the end, I was not a fan of, what was the baseball one?
Eastbound and Down.
Yeah, I thought that one kind of lost.
Well, Eastbound and Down lost its own premise.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know.
Too many of these fucking shows.
Yeah.
A good sitcom, here's what you do.
Yeah.
And it happens. Okay. Also, if a show does last for 10 years,
mm-hmm.
The Office went 3 years after Steve Carell left.
Yeah.
And had no reason to live.
Yeah.
But here's a good sitcom. Cheers.
Yeah.
You set up a location.
Mm-hmm.
You set up the personalities.
Yeah.
And you stay there.
Well, so
Weeds. Much- Weeds yeah. was a good show. And then they were like, what if we burn down the town where the whole show is set?
Yeah.
And then it was insane nonsense after
yeah,
that. These people get bored making their own show.
Yeah.
And they lose their minds.
But Righteous Gemstones, I think, is very good. I'm a fan of it. I agree that there are certain, like John Goodman isn't doing that much to this point.
It's not
They haven't
funny.
Ran that many episodes. Well, I also think it is...
All right.
It is by design not meant to be as funny as something like Vice Principals. Remember, like, season two of Vice Principals. It was a big tonal change from the first to the second season there. And I think this is more of an intriguing, like, this is more of a...
Vice Principals got
more of a crime subplot.
Vice Principals got pretty dark.
Yeah, it did.
But it was always funny.
Yeah, and the ending of that was unbelievable. That thing was great.
Yeah, Vice Principals...
That first season of that is the best season ever of anything, in my opinion.
All right.
It's one of the best.
But Danny McBride fucked himself on this premise.
The Righteous Gemstones.
Yes.
In what way?
All right. The Danny McBride formula, which he has done over and over again, starting with the foot fist way.
Okay.
Is a small town schnook or a loser who has delusions of grandeur.
Uh-huh.
These are people who are wildly successful.
Yeah.
They're con artist bullshit people, and you should think they're small.
Yeah.
Because they're tiny-minded, religious. First of all, I guess I just hate televangelists.
So what you're saying is the fact that he's a televangelist, he's already a dirtbag.
Yes.
You don't have the dirtbag being the principal or the kung fu guy or the baseball player.
There is inherent there's inherent comedy in a vice principal thinking that that job is important to the or that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or the grandiosity of it or thinking he's hot shit. And that it's like Danny McBride's characters are these inarticulate goons who kind of gradually learn a lesson.
Yeah.
This is a fucking con artist bullshit asshole who lives in a $1 million mansion and is a complete fucking jerk to everybody, and all the family are complete fucking jerks. And the first episode starts with violence where they're running, they literally run people over, and you're like,
well,
I don't like the tone
of it. But it's like the con man fighting with other con men.
Yeah, but I don't
think... I agree with you.
I think he broke his own formula.
I see what you're saying. I mean, look, I think that Danny McBride
He's playing the same guy.
Well, yeah.
But it's the same guy who has made a... They're a successful super church operation, and they're supposed to be making millions of dollars.
Yeah.
I don't have any sympathy for them.
No.
They're con artists. I don't like religious people. I don't like televangelists.
Well, I don't think this TV show is supposed to make you like televangelists. I don't think that's ever the point.
No, but there's no rooting interest.
There's
no sympathy.
There are
comedy.
Good people within, without giving away any plot points, there are people in the family, there are people that maybe you should be rooting for, you know. I don't know. But again, sometimes that point of view changes.
Basil.
You know, looking at Vice Principals even, where... Boy, you really wanted to hate Danny McBride, and then second season, he's completely sympathetic.
Great comedies involve people, in most regards, involve people with loftier ambitions than they're able to achieve.
Okay.
And this guy's already rich from being a bullshit artist. It's not funny.
But he's trying to stay successful, and the church could be ruined by his, is it as good as Vice Principals at this point? No. But they're not even halfway through the season.
You know, Basil Fawlty thinks he's running the four seasons, but he's running Fawlty Towers.
Okay.
There's a gap between...
Yeah, I get that.
All comedy. I've said this a hundred times. All comedy.
Michael Scott is the world's best boss. I understand these things.
All comedy is the gap between expectation and reality.
Yes.
That is where comedy exists.
Yes.
And this doesn't leave room for that. Much like Glow doesn't really...
Dwight is the assistant to the regional manager.
Exactly.
He wants to be the assistant regional manager.
Exactly.
But he's the assistant to the regional manager. Don't have to explain this shit to me, but Righteous Gemstones is good.
Abbott and Costello are always trying to squeeze a dollar out of something. Look, chick, if we work on this railroad, we'll have enough money. We can finally buy that gambling den or whatever, you know, right? It's always good comedy is about losers who struggle. It's not about winners who are losers.
They join the army to get away from the mafia. They have gambling debts.
That's why Roseanne sucked when they won the lotto.
All right. I liked Righteous Gemstones a lot. I'm going to keep watching it. So what about this show? Have you seen On Becoming a God in Central Florida?
No, I have not.
With Kirsten Dunst.
I saw the trailer for it.
It's on Showtime.
Yeah.
Now, apparently I was reading about this show before we sat down. This was originally going to be on like YouTube Red. So this thing is kind of bounced around.
Well, didn't they shut down YouTube Red?
They give away the shows now, but I think there's commercials in them. So if you want to watch The Karate Kid, what's the name of the Cobra Kai?
Uh-huh.
I think anyone can watch it now, but it's got commercials in it. I think that's what they did with it. But anyway, here's the deal. I think On Becoming... It's funny because I read the... Thinking of Metacritic, the On Becoming a God in Central Florida reviews were better than the ones for Righteous Gemstones. And I think from watching the show, I went like, oh, Righteous Gemstones is way better than this. But it's still okay. Kirsten Dunst, it takes place in the early 90s. And without giving anything away, the background is multi-level marketing. So think of your Amway, you make money by having people underneath you. You have a downline and an upline. And so basically Kirsten Dunst's husband is trying to get rich. And he's all in on these multi-level marketing things. And he's throwing all his money buying paper towels and cleaning products. And, you know, things happen here and there. Kirsten Dunst gets caught up in it. She has her day job where she works in a water park. So you get to see Kirsten Dunst in a bathing suit. That happens.
Well, we've seen it.
Yeah, well, it happens. Well, now she's almost 40.
Well, but
it's a different Kirsten Dunst. But,
yeah, I think I saw the one I wanted to
see. Well, no, you might like this one, too. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say it's like great, but I also in the first episode, something happened in the first episode went like, holy shit, I didn't see that coming. That was really good. So I did enjoy that element of it. I think it's worth a look. Not everybody has Showtime.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't hear a lot of buzz about this show.
No.
And I think in a way it's kind of like Righteous Gemstones in the sense that these multi-level marketing people are completely sleazy.
No,
and there is sort of, you know, it's her kind of taking them on and going to war with them. And, you know, I'm watching it. It's all right. I've seen better. I've seen worse.
Well.
How about Beth Ditto in this story? How about that?
Oh.
Have you heard that name in a while?
From the gossip?
She's like a suburban housewife.
Oh. Wow.
In this movie.
Well, we've done better episodes. I'll tell you that. This one's not going in the time.
Would you stop it? Do we have time for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
I don't know how long we've
been. If you add in the Norm interview, we're over 2 hours.
Well, that's plenty.
All right, I think we'll wrap it up. But we got to do a deep dive into Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. We've got to do a deep dive into which Amazing Jonathan documentary is the best.
Oh, geez.
Because we really are uniquely qualified to review that
one. Why
don't
we talk about those? Because Once Upon a Time will probably come up in the Oscar season.
I think it will.
All right, what do you think about the Amazing Jonathan?
Well, look, I think if you're going to see one, well, look, the Hulu documentary that came out, we had reviewed the Steve Byrne one,
mm-hmm.
which was called I should get the names of these. It's on YouTube. I think it's called The Unbelievable True Story of the Amazing Jonathan it's called Always Amazing, The True Story of Amazing Jonathan.
Yes.
That's on YouTube. We thought that was really good. It's largely the story of Jonathan and his assistant. But, you know, a lot of stuff about Amazing Jonathan's health and his drug use and career.
Now, the other one's just called The Amazing Jonathan.
Well, it's what it's actually called, if you look at the poster, is The Untitled Amazing Jonathan Documentary. And the word untitled is crossed out. So it's now just called The Amazing Jonathan Documentary. And, of course, a major plot point in this one is that there is another documentary crew following Jonathan around,
mm-hmm.
which ends up being the Steve Byrne documentary crew. And a lot of the movie has to do with, who are this other documentary crew and why do they have it in for me making my documentary? So this guy, what's Ben's last name?
Schwartzman?
I don't know. Look up Ben.
Ben Schwartzwalder.
It's a Jewish guy.
Ben Schmeckman. Dickie Dickman.
So Ben is making this movie and it ends up being more about Ben than Jonathan because he feels like Jonathan's a con man, which he is. And, you know, never trust a magician, and Ben doesn't, and he questions whether Jonathan is actually sick. There is a scene when, you know, Jonathan
Ben Berman.
Ben Berman. There you go. How much we missed by. missed by a foreskin. All right.
No, I think he's missing a foreskin.
I think one of the critical scenes, I think the one that everyone talks about is like, Jonathan's like, well, I'll show you how I'm doing crystal meth, but only if you do it too.
You have to smoke crystal meth.
Yeah. And then it's like, will he or will he not smoke crystal meth on camera?
Well, this is, you know what? That scene made me think, okay. And then so Ben literally considered doing it.
Yeah.
Until somebody talked him out.
Exactly.
And this, so I was recently approached by a radio show that wanted to have a comedian who had done jail time perform in a prison.
In a prison.
And I went, I thought, and I asked a guy, and I was like,
yeah,
I don't think anyone wants to draw attention to that.
Yeah.
And to ask that is misguided. To ask someone, would you like to talk about your jail time as a comic performer?
Yeah.
Because the comic's trying to put that behind them.
Well, and I guess there's probably comics that would talk about going to jail. I don't know.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
In their act. I don't know any off the top of my head.
But you know what I mean, though? I don't know. It seemed like a weird ask.
Yeah.
And I feel like the same thing with this. I mean, Maisie Jonathan's basically like, look, I still do the drugs because it worked for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
Now, the guy's also sick. I don't know.
Well, he does bring up the point. Ben does bring up, like, this is gonzo journalism. I'm going to embed myself with a drug addict, essentially, mm-hmm. and so I'll show that. And his family is concerned for him.
Part of that feels like an act, too.
Well, this is a better movie.
It is better than
this. It's a better movie. It's a more interesting. If you watch one, watch the Jonathan, the Amazing Jonathan documentary on Hulu. That's the one you should watch. However, the YouTube Steve Burns documentary. Steve Burns is a comedian. For those of you who don't know, did the TV show Sullivan and Sons. Did a great job with what he did too.
Yeah.
And Steve Burns is not a, and I guess this is a plot point in the movie as well, in Ben's movie, in Ben Berman's movie, but he is not an A-list documentary director, even though, for whatever reason, as you'll see in the movie, is maybe he's made out to be. And that was one of the things, I guess, that I knew going into it, which made me feel like, you know, I know that this was made by Steve Burns, even though they're blacking his face out everywhere and going, and I've seen the movie, and the movie isn't an Oscar-worthy documentary, and Ben Berman's movie actually does feel like it has some qualitative, whether it be production values or editing, to be a better-made movie. Ben being the underdog maybe doesn't work for me like he would like it to because I had seen the other documentary.
He realizes his documentary is blown by the other documentary being made.
So which one, if you're going to watch one, which one should you watch?
I would watch the Ben Berman one. It's more interesting.
Okay, but if you're
from a perspective, if you want to learn about Jonathan, the Steve Byrne might tell you more about Jonathan.
Well, should you watch that one first if you're going to watch both, or should you watch?
I would watch the Berman one first.
Okay.
If you're going to watch one, watch the Berman. If you're going to watch both,
okay,
watch Berman and then watch Steve Byrne. The Steve Byrne gives a little bit better history of Jonathan.
Yeah.
And goes into his, you know, growing up and his background as a comic.
Right.
Because I think Steve was more interested in him as a comic.
Yeah.
And Ben Berman's interested in him as a trickster and his personal relationship with him.
And I think Jonathan...
There's too much in the Steve Byrne one about the sidekick and his relationship with him. I couldn't care about that guy.
Right, who's not even in the other movie.
I couldn't
never
care less
once.
About that guy.
Yeah.
And he was a big focus of it.
Yeah.
And this, like, he was an older brother to me.
Yeah.
I didn't give a shit about any of that.
Okay.
And that's just me. But that guy wasn't compelling.
And I think Jonathan comes off worse in the Ben Berman movie.
Much worse.
Yeah.
It's not, but that's also part of Jonathan's image.
Yeah.
He burnishes that image. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've worked with the guy twice now, and I wouldn't say that I really have, you know, there's guys I've worked with multiple times, and I feel like I know them fairly well.
Yeah.
I mean, even if it's only 6 or 7 days of your life, whatever, that you've worked with them, you feel like you get to know them reasonably well. I've worked with Jonathan a couple times, and I don't think I know him at all.
No, I agree
and
with that,
you know, I think I know Anna, his wife, better than him.
Yeah, I know. We've both spent more time with Anastasia than we spent with Jonathan.
And she's real nice, but I mean, like I've had a lot of...
Yeah,
although, these are the kind of people they are, though.
Mm.
I don't have... You know what I mean? I've worked with him twice, whatever, and he wouldn't know my name if he saw me on the street. But he'd go, oh, yeah, maybe I know.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. You're that guy. And... but he'll also just tell you shit.
Yeah.
He's a real honest guy.
Yeah.
I know how much money he made off the Ben Berman movie.
Yeah.
I know what he negotiated for.
Yeah.
I know how much Ben Berman made.
And he told me the numbers and the details and stuff. And I watch it knowing that information too, and I go, well, why was Jonathan having all these documentaries going? It's because they were writing him a check.
Right.
That never comes up in the movie, which feels a little dishonest, dude. Well, so my feeling is that Ben Berman isn't the most honest guy in the room. And Steve Byrne wrote a whole thing on YouTube when the Ben Berman movie came out.
Right.
And should I read some of that or should I have just people go look at that?
I mean, you have to really watch the things, but
yeah.
There's been a...
Because Steve Byrne's like, this guy just made this shit up, and it sounds like Ben Berman really did.
Well, Berman,
it's still a good movie, but
Berman looked for something to make the documentary about.
Yeah,
he started, you know, and he talks about it. He's like, I don't really have an ending, so he really turns the other documentary crew into like this big villain or problem, and the whole thing.
I'm the underdog in this,
and this whole deal.
Yeah,
and that's how he casts the story. It comes off as interesting in the film.
Yeah.
If you think about it,
well,
it's probably full of shit.
Well, look, all documentaries are stories.
Yes.
And they're not any different from a narrative film in that a narrative film has a story, just as a documentary does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how do you tell that story? And in a way, a documentary is done after the fact in a lot of ways through the editing and its voiceovers versus a narrative movie, where it's done in advance.
I think that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez movie, they were probably shooting that. Not thinking she was going to win, then she did. Changes your whole project, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, they're both interesting. Jonathan's a real interesting guy.
Mm-hmm.
Being behind the scenes and seeing some of that stuff, I have a very different perspective on the whole deal.
Yeah.
I think than other people, so it's a little difficult to. And you were right there watching the all that stuff. So we probably have a skewed perspective. Yeah.
Well, you're talking about documentaries. I mean, I'm going to spoil it now. I didn't when I reviewed it, but that movie, Last Days in Aleppo, which was about Syria, which was, I think it was Oscar nominated. I don't know if it won or not. I can't remember. Best documentary. They're following the guy around. The motherfucker dies.
Yeah.
The guy got murdered got blown up in a bomb.
Good times.
And they're following the guy around.
Yeah.
And you're watching this guy for an hour going, this is a really good guy. I hope everything works out for him and his family in Syria. And they cut to him lying under a pile of rubble.
Yeah, good talk.
Great movie. I know it sounds depressing, but that was a good movie.
I wish the Dane Cook documentary did it the same way.
It's the Gallagher documentary.
Somebody
make that fucking thing. Ben, I challenge you.
To do the Gallagher documentary?
Ben, follow that idiot Gallagher around and make a movie about that dickhead. Because that fucking cocksucker has nothing redeeming about him.
Oh, my God.
And we know that from a personal experience of my own and secondhand experience from people that recently had an experience with Gallagher.
There was some Gallagher talk on that other podcast I did, let me tell you.
Well, there was a guy, and probably, I don't know the same person, but, you know, people went to that show, and there was a guy that's my Facebook friend that wrote about Gallagher and what a dick he was, but didn't want to mention his name. So I sent him a message. I go, you realize I know you're talking about Gallagher, and Gallagher is a fucking asshole, and everyone in the business knows that. So don't be afraid that you're going to be blackballed if you say Gallagher is an asshole.
I mean, sometimes there's it's worth it to name names.
Yeah.
Also, don't go see every comic that comes to town.
No, don't.
There's sometimes people go, this comedian was telling me the other night, like, I'm going to go see this, and this. I'm like, well, I understand going to see some of those shows.
Yeah.
But don't expect them all to be great. Or if you go and see Dustin Diamond, it's going to suck.
Yeah.
This wasn't Dustin Diamond.
Right.
But you know what I mean? Like, anyway, Gallagher.
Well, there's also the
Gallagher gave you what you expected out of him, which is nothing.
But it's also a thing, and I think this applies a little bit to Chappelle and some of the hero worship there is, you know, maybe watch less comedy, do more comedy.
Well, that's the other thing.
Every night you're going out to watch one of these dickheads, whoever they are, and I'm not saying everyone's a dickhead, but, you know, Gallagher is. Every time you're going out to watch one of these guys do comedy, you know, there's becomes a point when you're like, okay, I'm a comic now. I'm not going to watch the specials. I'm not going to try to have my own voice. And, you know, my inspiration for comedy was all of the years I lived up to right now, plus whatever I'm seeing and observing. And, you know,
well, look,
there's going to be 100 guys who sound exactly like Dave Chappelle, Sticks and Stones on open mic. And if open mics weren't bad enough, that's what they're going to sound like now.
I'm sure I'm doing a show tonight. I'm sure I'll hear it.
You're going to.
It's the circle of life.
Yeah.
Because when you start off in comedy, you're like, oh, my God, I love. Or you start off watching comedy and going, oh, wow, I'm going to watch these comics. I'm studying. I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
Then you start doing comedy. And then you're still watching the comics.
Yeah.
But the point is, then you get good enough where you watch the comics up close because you're working for them.
Yeah, yeah.
You're working with them.
Yeah.
And you watch all these good comics.
Right.
Then you get so good that you're headlining and you don't get to see the good comics anymore.
There's that.
Then you watch the specials again. Well, so it's a circle of life.
Well, there's also the thing, and I think we're going to tie it all back into Norm. You see guys who are famous who suck, and you see guys you've never heard of that are brilliant. And, you know, that's also one of the cruel ironies of comedy. And that's the cruel irony of podcasting. That's the cruel irony of everything.
That's right.
There you go. Well, Corey Hall.
All right.
I think we said it all. We actually didn't say it all. We just ran out of time to say it all. There's more to say.
Well, there'll be another podcast.
I said, you come in, we'll cut a short podcast. We cut a full-length podcast, and now got to put a 90-minute or 30-minute interview in it.
Have we not said it all in 15 years of this nonsense? This is the Frito-Lay of podcasts.
What does that
Crunch
mean?
All you want, we'll make more.
Well, that is true. To quote one of the great comedians.
Was it Doritos?
Yeah, I think it was Doritos.
So with the crunch all you want, we'll make one.
Yeah, come on.
Doritos.
That's all right.
And then, of course, Bill Hicks did a famous fucking bit about Jay Leno shilling Doritos to Bovine America.
But you know what? He was doing stuff, Bill Hicks, that Chappelle's doing now,
right,
with none of the recognition that Chappelle's getting for it. And that's too bad, but that's the world we live in.
There was no social media when Bill Hicks was rolling.
Yeah, Bill Hicks, nobody's hero, unfortunately.
He'd be getting slammed now.
Yeah. But he'd also probably be really popular within certain circles. So who knows? What can I tell you?
Unlike us. All right.
Thank you, Corey. Buy Corey's organ. Get a hold of Corey.
Buy my organ.
Buy Corey's organ. Right
come
now,
see,
it's available for sale.
Come see me at the Bolero Lounge.
Oh, when is that?
October 16th.
All right.
In Royal Oak, Michigan, newly renovated. Looks like a retro 70s style.
Yeah.
Bowling alley. It's gorgeous in there. We're going to be putting on a show.
Do it. Go see
More
Corey.
More details to come.
New bowling alley, same jokes. Corey Hall.
That's
Go
right.
Go see him. And 9:10 a.m. every Tuesday night with me. And the Mike Bonner Round Midnight Show. You can catch me on the radio. 9:10 a.m. superstation.com. What else can I tell you? I don't know. Let's get out of here. Go watch a good show. There's lots of good shows. TV shows.
Don't watch Blinded by the Light.
I like it. See you later.